I guess.
On the Riff.
Hey, Riff!
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Broadcasting worldwide on the web, you're listening to 101 WRIF at WRIF.com, a service of Greater Media. Keep it here for more Riff Rock coming right up.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We pulled out our list of funny but real names and just started dialing.
Is there a dick blower there?
Yeah.
Oh, is this a dick blower?
Yeah.
What do you charge?
A whole lot.
No, how much?
How much am I going to pay?
I don't know. I was asking you. I mean, I assume you set the price.
You're a big smart ass, ain't you?
What are you talking about? Yeah, I'm sorry to bother you. We're wondering, is there a dick coming there?
There is no dick coming. There's Richard coming.
I got a listing for a dick coming?
No.
Wasn't
I've never been called Dick in my life.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dick's short for Richard, though, is it not?
Not in my case.
I know. I understand. You're just trying to avoid me coming back and saying, well, hurry up, get a towel.
Get a towel for what?
For the fact that there's a dick coming there.
Oh, for Christ's
sake. What happened?
The lines are open. 313-298-WRIF, we're what we call in the talk radio biz, open line. That means you can talk about anything you want. People often respond to what I'm saying. So I'm going to talk about Mel Gibson's new exercise in sadomasochism called The Passion. It's the last 12 hours of the life of Jesus of Nazareth. And talk a little more about that in a minute. But I was thinking about religious things, and, you know, people that are, I don't know, well, I mean, I want to make sure I'm not going to, I don't care if I offend people. I got to say that. I mean, I do and I don't. I do and I don't. But here's what I was thinking. You know, religious people get pretty wacky all over the world. I mean, you think about the violence that's carried out in the name of Christianity and Islam and Hinduism and all that. It's pretty scary. And a lot of times they read stuff, you know, these kind of religious nuts. I mean, people that are so, in a sense, overcome by the sense of their religion that they want to do damage to people that don't believe the same way they do. They often get signs, hear things, and this is, I was thinking, the beginning of our show, man. What is this? Listen to this. Here, listen. Wow, what's that? What's that all about? Anyways, we'll talk about Mel Gibson's film in just a minute. You want to start talking about that, please join me. You can also join me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. You can go to my website and see some of the stuff that we're talking about. Peter Werbe, that's PeterWerbe.com. WERBE.com. Well, for better or for worse, and probably for worse, it was worse the first time, Ralph Nader has announced he's going to run for the White House. And the Democrats regard him as the spoiler in Al Gore's bid for the White House 4 years ago. This is, I'm sort of paraphrasing what it says here in the New York Times. And actually, kind of depends on how you cut it. If Nader hadn't have been in the election at all, he got about 3 measly percentage of the vote. But in some states, like Florida, yeah, right, he got about 80,000 votes, and that could have been enough to, if he hadn't been there, the Gore would have easily won. We wouldn't have been cursed with this administration now, this, you know, friend of the rich and the corporate masters of the world, you know, who carries out wars based on lies and the whole nine yards of it. Anyways, so he didn't really spoil Al Gore's bid. I mean, Al Gore won the election, including winning the election in, I wonder where my screener is. Rick Fox, are you with me? Huh. Hey, if you're on the line and you're ringing, I don't see people just hung up. I don't know. I wonder what happened. Rick Fox, our producer and phone screener, just ain't there. I don't know. Well, we always call. Never mind. Anyways. So, actually, Gore won, and to that extent, I mean, that's one of the defenses of the Greens, that say, you know, Nader didn't lose the election for Gore, it was stolen from Gore by the Republicans. Hey, Rick, you going to screen any phones?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Backpack, from the last show.
Oh, someone had to get their backpack. Oh, yeah, well, you can't do this when we go, you know, network, Rick. Right? All right. So that, thoughts about Nader running. I think it's a, I mean, I don't think he's going to get, I don't think he'll get a total of 1% even. And out in San Francisco, the marriages between same-sex people continue. Hundreds of people gathered today to honor San Francisco's newly married same-sex couples as politicians continue to debate whether the mayor overstepped his authority in allowing the unions. Well, I support the right of anyone to get married under any circumstances they choose, as long as they're within reason. You can't have people marrying eight-year-olds, but in terms of adults, I can't understand the objection to it. Almost 2,000 people registered to attend the celebration at the Hyatt Regency Hotel's Grand Ballroom, which was all decorated, and it was a Freedom to Marry event. The marriage of Del Martin, 83, and Phyllis Lyon, 79, longtime leaders in the city's lesbian committee, community, who've been together 51 years. They were the focal point of the celebration. They were the first of more than 3,000 gay couples married in San Francisco. City Hall was closed today, pardon me, but city officials were expected to resume issuing same-sex marriage licenses tomorrow, despite protests from conservative groups and Governor Gropernader. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? And two judges last week denied requests by conservative groups. Who else? Who else? I mean, they've always been against everything. I mean, remember? I mean, I'll do real quickly the litany. The conservatives were against the American Revolution. They thought we should continue being colonists. The conservatives thought only white propertied males should be allowed to vote. They thought slavery should continue. They thought women shouldn't vote. They thought unions shouldn't be formed. They thought, on and on and on. What else? I mean, what other things can we think of? I mean, they're always against everything that made this society more democratic, and it is no different today. Do I have anything else on my, my list? We talked about this right at the end of last Sunday's show. What will save Bush? Right now, his deal is going down. And which is a good thing, as far as I'm concerned. The faster we get rid of George Bush and his multi-millionaire, billionaire administration that is of the rich, by the rich, and for the rich, the better off the people of the United States will be and the people of the world. But he's not going to take this lying down. One thing, he's got over $100 million that he raised from his corporate buddies. I mean, he's like the fundraiser-in-chief. That's all they do. You know, he, Cheney, now Laura, they're all out there raising millions and millions and millions of dollars. And very frequently, what takes elections, because these things just turn into these big auctions, who can get the most corporate money? And the Democrats are going to be going for corporate money, too. Make no mistake about that. I mean, a month ago or so, Edwards... one of the senators running for the Democratic nomination for president, the senator from South Carolina, and John Kerry, they were almost broke. And here is Bush sitting on this $100 million fortune that he's raised from all these polluters and corporate gangsters and people that are ripping off us and the people of the world. And this is the basis of his administration, and this is what we're going to see is this propaganda of the Democrats want to raise taxes on people again, right? Well, the tax bill that Bush wants to make permanent is nothing but a permanent giveaway to the wealthy. It's not about I don't think I've heard anybody on the Democratic side say that they ought to raise taxes again on you and me. In fact, Wesley Clark was saying exactly what I had said. Remember that there ought to be a $50,000 tax deduction right off the top. Families making under $50,000 shouldn't even have to pay taxes. And then it ought to begin slowly graduated until you get to the people with lots of money and then start taxing them heavily. Leave them with a few million. But, they've got all the power, they've got all the prestige, they've got all the fancy cars and stuff like that. And the men and women that are really working their butts off in this society aren't getting paid enough, and they're paying too much taxes. The people that that get so richly rewarded, in fact, sometimes obscenely rewarded, for essentially being involved in, or very frequently, in operations that take advantage of people, that pollute the planet, and on, they're the ones with all the money. Let them pay the costs. Now, what is going to save Bush? Now, that's the question. The man behind it all, Karl Rove, the advisor to Bush, he's always got little deals. He's got little, election plans. So they'll just do little things like this, for instance. This budget that Bush has put forth, filled with misrepresentations and lies, as usual, that's what was $2 trillion and a budget deficit of $500 billion. You know, Bush came in with a surplus. Now we owe $500 billion because they dried up the revenue. They dried up the revenue for the country. So now we're operating, at a deficit. I mean, you know how that is. It's like a credit card, except now the United States is maxed out. Bush says, don't worry. Tax revenues are going to start coming in higher because more jobs are being created. Well, we know that's a lie, too. More jobs aren't being created, or they're certainly not being created in anywhere near the figures, and they've admitted that was predicted. Also, the budget doesn't include all the money for the continuing Bush wars, as we give away hundreds of millions of dollars at a crack to the firm, not to Iraq, but to the firms that are, quote, trying to rebuild Iraq after, Bush's pals destroyed Iraq, those corporations that were doing that. Well, here's the budget. Have you ever seen a budget, the document? It's not very interesting, and it's pretty hard to make any sense. I kind of looked at it and went, all right, whatever. And it's filled with charts and graphs, but not this one. Not the Bush budget. I mean, I'm talking about the physical book or whatever you'd call it, or portfolio. It's filled with 27 photographs of George W. Bush. Color photographs of showing him being presidential, of, out in poor communities, of being, with Hispanics, with African Americans, it's like it turned into this propaganda piece. So you and I paid for the photographer or photographers that took these photographs, and we paid for the printing, including that include them in this budget document. And essentially what it is a re-election campaign document. That's what that is. I have no idea what the Bush machine is going to concentrate on. I mean, partly, strong leadership, saving the economy. I mean, good luck. The jobs are still gone. Deindustrialization is still occurring. And one of their, which Republican was that said that outsourcing to foreign countries eventually will help the United States? The United States? How about the individual worker who's lost his or her job? I don't think so. All right, let's get to Mel Gibson's movie. Now, a lot of times people will be critical of things that they haven't seen or they haven't read. And I'm a defender of those people, because sometimes people will say, oh, that's obscene. And they'll say, have you seen it? And they go, no, I don't have to see it to know it's obscene. Well, I mean, that's true. I mean, I don't have to go see and read everything. I mean, you can read about something and know a lot of its, the quality of its contents. So I haven't seen the movie, but I've read enough about it. Normally, I don't like to give publicity. I don't like to give publicity to things that I dislike. And what's his name? P.T. Barnum said a century ago, or even more, I think, any publicity is good publicity as long as you spell my name right. So it doesn't, the fact that Mel Gibson's movie has been accused of being anti-Semitic, sadomasochistic, overly violent, weird and wacko because it's in Aramaic and Latin. For its, give it an air of authenticity. That's only it's free publicity essentially. So I'm doing the same thing. I mean, I should I should send them a bill. Except we're getting it all for free. They are rather. Now this is all kind of wacky stuff. Mark Weitzman, who's the director of the Task Force Against Hate at the Simon Wiesenthal Center, They believe that Gibson faults the Jewish high priest rather than the Roman tyrant Pontius Pilate for sending Jesus to his death, and they're upset that Gibson did not cut one line implying Jews are cursed by God. What he did, he has the line in the film in Aramaic, but he took it out. You don't get the subtitle of it, I guess. And Gibson's father is this total whack that says the Holocaust didn't occur. And when Diane Sawyer confronted him about about his father, Gibson just said, like, don't go there, Diane, don't go there. I mean, if my dad was saying publicly that the Holocaust didn't happen to the extent that is documented, and instead was saying all these Jews that were murdered en masse were living in New York, well, gee, I mean, I'd be out there publicly saying, listen, love my dad, but he's got a screw loose. And Mel Gibson won't denounce his father's remarks. Critics charge the ultra-gory movie, I want to get back to ultra-gory in a second, could incite anti-Jewish attacks and some worry that it will undermine decades of Judeo-Christian reconciliation. Now, there's a couple elements in this. You say, what are you talking about? Jews for generations in Europe particularly dreaded Easter, because that's when the story of the crucifixion was retold, and frequently Christian mobs, in all their compassion, would go out and attack Jews, would enter the Jewish sections or the ghettos the Jews were forced or required to live in, and attack them. So this was the crucifixion story is directly connected frequently with anti-Semitic acts, particularly when it's accentuated. And this is all that this is about. The last 12 hours, it is called ultra gory. The violence is supposed to be just horrific beyond belief. And what does Gibson say? Well, that's what the Bible says. Well, your old pal Pete actually did something he rarely ever does. He read the Bible tonight. I was reading Luke and Matthew and what am I forgetting? All this in Mark. And I was going to bring it, but somehow I just don't want to read the Bible on the air. I mean, that's my thing. I don't believe in God. I don't believe in Jesus was divine, any of that stuff. I mean, that's my thing. I mean, I know lots of Christians, Jews, Muslims, Buddhists, people like that. And they're good people. I mean, all the ones I know, all the religious people I know are just some of the damn most decent people in this community, always doing good work, but it's not my deal. So I didn't want to bring the Bible. But when you read those chapters in the Bible, they don't have all that gore. They say he was scourged, comma, he was spat upon, comma, forced to drink bile-laced vinegar, something like that, struck on the head and had a crown of thorns. It's pretty horrific. But it doesn't concentrate. It doesn't have this detail of hideous humiliation and horrible torture that, from all accounts, including the self accounts that that Gibson has talked about in his interviews. Whatchamacallit, man, you don't hear that much anymore. is that the suffering is what it's all about? Now Gibson says he got a sign. He says he took it as a sign to make the Passion of Christ when a strange French woman approached him several years ago and said, Jesus loves you. I'll tell you about Jesus loves you in a second. But, if I had a dime for every time someone came up to me and said, Jesus loves you, well, I'd have at least a buck. I mean, these street preachers and these people hanging around, like you go downtown Royal Oak, places like that, or other cities, people are always, they give you this kind of wide-eyed stare, and they say, Jesus loves you, my friend. I say, well, thank you. Glad to hear it. And so, but this is, when you've got access to $30 million the way Gibson does, you can say, well, I'm going to make a film then. It never occurred to me to make a film, I have to say that. But just a little parenthesis here. Back in the 1970s, when LPs were still being played, some of these religious whacks said that when you played Led Zeppelin backwards, it said, I love Satan and stuff like that. And I think they actually found places in there. Now, you'd kind of think, where did they get this idea in the first place? Number one, it was called backward masking. So what would happen is that would mask this, and who was it? Either Plant or Page that was into devil worship, or not devil worship, into, what was, I mean, they were into some English, someone call me up, 313-298-WRIF and remind me that guy that they were into that was into Satanism or whatever. Anyway, so their contention, these Christian religious nuts, was that Led Zeppelin had embedded stuff about Satan on their albums, and you could hear it when you played it backwards. Well, I don't know how the hell they ever played it backwards, or why they ever played it backwards, or why they thought that if you played it forward, that it would somehow do something to the listener is way beyond me. Anyways, if you take the phrase, Jesus loves you, and you actually play it backwards, and I've done this before. I used to have, where were my tapes of this? Jesus loves you. It says, I smell sausage. I smell sausage. It does. Sounds like that, at least. I smell sausage. And then I would do it backwards. I would say into the tape, I smell sausage. And you'd play it backwards, and it would say, Jesus loves you. Well, that was a parenthesis. So your thoughts on any of this, the major marketing, I mean, this is what's so bizarre about all of this. I mean, the country is ready for one of these religious periods of religious madness that used to sweep the Middle Ages. It's partly a sign of a society in collapse. I mean, that's what happened in Europe when it was collapsing before the Europeans, went beyond their boundaries and brought all their problems over here to the New World rather than trying to solve them there. I mean, that's the whole part of the problem. Rather than being confronted with a millennium of mistakes in how Europe was being run, this supreme arrogance that you still see in the Bushes and these religious right-wingers and what have you, this certitude about the superiority of what they're doing, even though everything they do fails and the whole world is collapsing around them, as it was in Europe in the 13th, 14th, 15th century. It was a religious madhouse, environmentally destroyed, absolute monarchy ruled everywhere, on and on like that. I mean, actual madness was way on the rise. So, but here in the United States, like in the 19th century, they had things like the Great Awakening, where these religious revivals swept the United States. Well, guess what kind of period it was? High unemployment, uncertainty about the future, great fears about the future. That, and so people then think, well, there is no hope. There is no hope that we as mortal humans have to solve our own problems. So then we're going to, turn to Jesus. Doesn't strike me as the way to go. How about this? I actually was going to start with this, and then I'll get to our calls. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. He was the Son of God, and his mother conceived him while she was a virgin. She's called the Mother of God. He was born on the 25th of December. Who are we talking about here? Pretty obvious, right? He was a symbol of justice, truth, and loyalty. He was considered the savior of mankind, with many stories about the miracles performed by him, including healing the sick, raising the dead, making the blind see, and the lame to walk. Throughout his lifetime, he was seen as a protector of human souls, as a mediator between heaven and earth, and was associated with a holy trinity. He was, they believed that there was heaven and hell, and that people would be judged by their God and granted the justice of eternal salvation. On Judgment Day, light would triumph over darkness, and the faithful dead would be resurrected. His followers took part in ritual purification of baptism, held Sundays sacred, ate bread, and drank wine as symbols of the body and the blood of their Savior. He was, with his earthly mission accomplished, he was put to death on a cross, buried in a cave, and then rose from the dead after he had taken part in the Last Supper with his 12 disciples. He ascended to heaven to watch over his flock from above. Rick Fox, are you listening to this, what I just said? Who am I talking about? Not Jesus. It is actually Mithras. Mithras, and who was a Persian god that predates Christianity by 2,000 years. So here is an identical story with all the same symbolism, with all the same, I don't know, I guess, what would you call it besides, essentially the same story. And there is thought among many scholars that that Christianity was in, was invented whole cloth out of these myths that had already existed. That if there in fact was an historic Jesus, and you're going to have to call 313-298-WRIF and convince me that there actually was an historic Jesus. I'm not even sure that I've seen anything that would convince me of that. I'm sorry to get really in your stuff if this is like wholly offensive to you, but I mean, this Gibson movie has just really put me off. Again, the good Christians that I know of this community are some of the most decent people around, and they base their acts of good work, of faith, of what do they call it even, of social witness, on their belief in Jesus and their religion. And I don't want to take that away from them, but when the Gibsons in the world want to put this all in my face, it really ticks me off. Because religion, you know, I mean, we live in a secular nation, and we should live in a secular nation. One nation under God, that's Iran. That was Afghanistan under the Taliban, when the religious nuts rule. And that's what these people are after. They want to turn this into a religious nation. But their little interpretation, hey, you could turn it over, and I won't name their names. I know some of them are listening. Some of these Catholic peace activists, for instance, that I know. Hi. And I mean, you could turn the country over to them, and this would be a wonderful place to live in. But that's not who, desire? I mean, they don't desire power. They certainly don't desire power over people. And, you know, they mean no harm to me. Whereas these right-wing Christians, and that's, it should be Christian right-wingers. In fairness, that's what it really should be. It's a way to manifest these far right-wing ideas with the mantle of religiosity. So it's not even open for debate. God says this. I, Mel Gibson, got a sign from God when some French woman came up to me and said, Jesus loves you. Maybe she said, I smell sausage, and he just kind of heard it backwards or something. All right, let's continue onward. Again, if I've offended anybody, apologies to you. I mean, you could just chalk me up as a lost sinner. Mark Twain, the great American writer, in any event, said, heaven for the climate, hell for the company. So me and all my pals will be down there, right? All right, let's continue. We got a caller waiting. All right, I'm Peter Werby. This is the Night Call Show. Our number is 313-298-WRIF. And our email address, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yes, my name is Michael Jennings. I'm from Southfield, and I just want to preface this by saying, first of all, I'm not a Republican or anything, but I was highly offended by your comments, Peter, considering, you know, not being a Christian, you know, and not knowing the history of Christianity, and to make disparaging remarks and to be extremely cynical of Christianity is extremely unfortunate. I think that in America particularly that Christianity has received an onslaught of criticism, and anything that has to do with the Lord Jesus Christ has come under such great scrutiny. But you can talk about Allah, Buddha, or any of these other gods, and you're okay. But as soon as you mention Jesus Christ and his blood, you know, you're some great right-wing conservative or all these things, you know, and to
no, I just, wait. I just said I knew all these people that were these wonderful community activists and a credit to our community, and that based their lives in Christianity. I'm willing to bet, Michael, that I know more about Christianity than you do.
Oh, I bet you don't, because I've studied it to a great extent, you know, and I'm a law student, and I've come up reading the Bible from an early child, and so.
Well, I don't think you know about Christianity and his historical, you know, how it functioned historically by reading the Bible, which I've read parts of it from time to time. How was it determined that Jesus was divine and not simply a great prophet?
Well, that was determined at the Council of Nicaea in 325.
That's right. You do know a lot. Very good.
By Constantine, who unofficially resided over there, you know, and Constantine for political purposes It's at the Edict of Milan in 313.
You know, right, you know a lot. All right. So, in other words, Jesus was declared divine by a show of hands, right? By the people assembled there.
Well, I mean, you could look at it that way from a secular sense, but in the sense of the Word of God says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. That's John 1:1. When you go down to verse 14, it says, and the Word was made flesh. Clearly indicative that it is talking and referring to the Lord Jesus Christ himself. And I think, you know, several of the scriptures show that, that 1 Timothy 3:16, it tells us that God was manifest in the flesh, justified in the spirit, seen of angels, you know. So Jesus is, I believe, God in flesh, you know. It's as simple as that, you know.
I mean, it's as simple as that because it's based on faith. I agree. You do know a lot, so my apologies. You may know as much or maybe even more. Thank you, Michael. Maybe I never should have brought this up. I mean, I don't want to. People start quoting the Bible. Well, my fault. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, this is Mike Gibson calling. I've been a caller for 2 or 3 years now.
Mike, are you any relation to Mel?
I certainly hope not. I certainly definitely hope not because I can't stand the guy. I really can't stand him. I mean, I used to like his. I liked The Road Warrior, and I liked Mad Max movies, but I can't stand this hysterical nonsense that he's putting on the screen right now.
Yeah, how come he always made these violent...
That's the thing. I heard you over saying that there's associations with sadomasochism. That's always been the case in Christianity. It's like the early saints used to flagellate themselves in order to experience some kind of ecstasy. And it's like a masochistic thing, or a sadomasochistic thing.
There is, if you read the life of the saints, some of them did some extraordinarily odd things, including, you know, as a show of the desire to humiliate the human flesh. And see, part of the problem that I have with the whole story is that it doesn't have a good message about people. I mean, we are such sinful, vile people that it took this act of redemption of the Son of God to even give us a chance to redeem ourselves. Now, if I came down here from another planet, or I just came out of the, I don't know, say I'd lived up in some Inuit village and thought, well, I wonder how people express themselves spiritually around here. And I had people, I wasn't culturally directed into Christianity, for instance. And I started listening to stories about, you know, Hinduism and Islam and Christianity. And I don't think that Christianity would be much of an appeal to me. I mean, saying that I was, a flawed, sinful person by virtue of my birth, by just being born into the world. I mean, from the little I know about Buddhism, the idea that we, in fact, not only are we perfect, we are all Buddhas, but then we fall away from our Buddha nature, that perfect nature, and yet as mortal humans, we can realize that Buddha nature by the acts we either choose or the ones that we refrain from, and that if we come to an understanding of what the world is all about and our place in it, that's a much better story to me.
And another thing I noticed is that if you look up at any world almanac, you'll find that approximately one-third of the world's population is Christian. The other two-thirds are non-Christian. Those include the Hindus, the Buddhists, the Islamists, the Judaists, but does that mean that the two-thirds that are non-Christian are going to hell because they don't believe in Jesus Christ? That's ridiculous.
Well, not people that are liberal. See, that's the deal. I mean, that are, what did I say it was? Christian liberals. The Christian liberals that I know don't think that at all. And would pray for people. I don't even know if they'd bother to pray for you and I. Maybe they don't even think we need to be praying. Because if we are good people on this earth, I look at this stuff with my intellect. I even look at it with my emotions and my heart. And it doesn't come to me. Just doesn't seem to make a bit of sense. I come from, I'm like a third generation atheist. So the opposite. So I'm going to be condemned to eternal damnation because, it doesn't make a bit of sense. Thank you, Michael, or Mike, rather.
Yep.
Appreciate it. We get this nonsense. Warren, sorry, I'm calling what you're writing me nonsense. Many holocausters been exposed up until 1962. Dachau, which was a site of Nazi extermination, was thought to have been using gas chambers. Now it is widely accepted, even among Jews, that there were no gas chambers. Warren, that's idiocy. I mean, it is not widely accepted, and it is absolutely not accepted in the slightest by anyone in the Jewish community. Give it up.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
So, David, I know you do all kinds of loans, but what about the larger loan amounts? Can you handle those?
You talking to me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. You're the mortgage expert. Of course you can handle those.
Absolutely. How about up to $1 million? Very little down, no out-of-pocket, and smaller monthly payments than you'd imagine.
No, I think I must be dreaming.
No, it's true. It's our interest-only loan. The sky's the limit. Exclusive and innovation from the mortgage experts.
So what if your loan is normal size, like most of us?
Haven't you heard? We're bringing Wall Street to Main Street. Interest-only loans aren't just for the big-timers anymore. You know, in 2003... we helped nearly 100,000 clients. Those were big and small loan amounts.
So size matters. It's incredible. And you're still ready for more, huh?
You said it, I didn't. That's right. More in 2004. Here we go.
Call Rock Financial, 800-333-ROCK, or go on rockfinancial.com. The mortgage experts. Big loans, smaller loans, purchase, refinance, consolidate debt. They do it all. 800-333-ROCK. A Quicken Loans company, equal housing lender.
Here we are.
Get ready for the 59th annual one-day-only Sale of the Century at Anderson's. This is Michigan's largest one-day motorcycle sale. Saturday, February 28th. Stop by Anderson's for 50% off on clothing and 20% off parts and service. Anderson's will have blowout pricing on the Yamaha motorcycle of your dreams. You'll find special 3.9% financing for 24 months on every new Yamaha. Factory reps will be on hand to answer all of your questions. Lunch is on Anderson's, so come on out. Saturday, February 28th, starting at 9 a.m. There's extra parking with free shuttle service. Anderson's is located on Telegraph Road in Bloomfield Hills. There will be exciting events like the indoor motorcycle races, a chance to win a free Yamaha motorcycle, magicians, clowns, and face painters. Don't miss the one-day-only Sale of the Century at Anderson's for super savings on Yamaha motorcycles, merchandise, parts, and service. This is truly a Yamaha motorcycle lover's dream come true. Stop by Saturday, February 28th for huge savings or call 248-858-2300.
Bob, the client who thinks he's a newscaster. He's one of those people who loves the sound of his own voice. And sure, this is an important call, but while he blathers on and on, the minutes on your plan are disappearing. It's time for more minutes you can use. With Nextel's National Value Plan, take advantage of our best cellular pricing ever. 500 anytime minutes for just $39.99 a month, with unlimited nights and weekends and long distance included. And get 100 walkie-talkie minutes so you can connect in under a second and get more done. Talk and walkie-talk. That's two ways to connect for one great price. Sign up now and save $75 on the I-730 with mail-in rebate. Trade up to Nextel. Bring your number. Call 800-NEXTEL-9, go to Nextel.com, or visit a store near you. Nextel. Done. Offers end March 31st, 2004. 1 or 2 year agreement required. $200 early termination, account setup fees, taxes, charges, and other restrictions apply. Porting eligibility varies. Phones by Motorola. Legal disclaimer. Done.
Introducing a sizzling new taste at Subway.
Fajita!
Succulent chicken or mouth-watering steak, topped with grilled peppers and onions, a shower of shredded Monterey cheddar cheese, and a shot of lip-smacking fajita sauce.
Fajita!
We'll pile on grilled green and red peppers, grilled onions, and a shower of shredded Monterey cheddar cheese, all topped off with a shot of Subway's exclusive fajita sauce. Experience Subway's sizzling new fajita taste today. Available for a limited time at participating Subway restaurants.
Fajita!
Every Friday home Pistons game is a Subway Family Friday. You can get 4 Pistons tickets, 4 Subway sandwich vouchers, and 4 Pistons collectibles, all for just $80. Treat your family to an exciting Pistons game, then feed them to Subway's new fajita taste. Vouchers good at participating Subway restaurants only. Visit Pistons.com for details.
Subway.
Pontiac, fuel for the soul. Let the soul stirring begin at Red Home and Pontiac GMC in Westland. The time to buy now. Take delivery by February 29th and get up to $3,500 in rebates on more than 1,200 new Pontiacs and GMC trucks in stock. Right now, get up to $2,000 in instant value certificates on remaining 03 Pontiacs and GMC trucks and up to $1,500 on select 04s. Take advantage of the new sign-in drive lease program. No security deposit, no down payment, and Red Home and waives the first payment. What a deal! Lease Polan's back. GMAC leases expiring between now and August 31st, 04. purchase or lease a new Pontiac or GMC truck, and all remaining payments are waived. Whether it's the performance of the all-new GTO, the wide-track handling of Grand Prix, Rudy Bonneville GXP, Sporty Grand Am, the fun-to-drive fine, or professional-grade GMC trucks, Red Home and Pontiac GMC at Westland has the vehicle for you. No dock fees or finance insurance managers at Red Home and never have been for 47 years, never will. Red Home and Pontiac GMC truck in Westland, the dealer to see. Just 2 miles east of I-275 at the Ford Road exit, or visit online at redholman.com.
Around the corner, around the country, at work or play, we're on the way to convenience stores of Speedway.
I love seeing so many customers keep coming back again and again.
Here's Speedway store manager Laura Roberts with a customer, Dale Jones.
I'm in here every morning. I haven't found a fresher cup of coffee anywhere.
And right now at Speedway, any size coffee or cappuccino is just 79 cents. That's right. Any size, just 79 cents.
That's the best coffee deal in town, period.
That's right. Any size, always hot, always fresh coffee or cappuccino is just 79 cents. Only at Speedway.
Great values, great prices. You've got my word on it.
The convenience stores of Speedway.
Now at Speedway, mix and match any brand of your favorite ice-cold 20-ounce soft drinks. Now two for just $2. Plus, save on varieties of tasty Nabisco Go-Pack snacks. Now just $1.49. Only at Speedway.
We're on your way to the convenience stores of Speedway.
You're listening to Night Golf, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. And thanks to all of you who called into 313-298-WRIF and emailed me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com to remind me and correct me that it was Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin who studied the teachings of Aleister Crowley, and Case correctly says that that he had nothing to do with Satanism. And he says, I have no idea if you can really hear the backward masking on these LPs. I wonder if you could do it on the CDs. He says, but I have heard that one before. I mean, utter weird nonsense. And so we're talking about Mel Gibson's movie, The Passion. The Passion in Latin means something like has suffered. Most Americans, according to an ABC polls, believe that some of the best-known Bible stories are literally true. Let's see here. That they believe that Moses actually parted the Red Sea, that God created the world in 6 days, and that Noah and the flood happened that way, word for word. I mean, I don't know anybody that believes that. Yeah, I guess some of you do. But and then it says, but fewer than 10% of Americans say all Jews today are responsible for the death of Jesus. So among evangelical Protestants, 12% of them say that Jews today are responsible for the death of Jesus. I mean, 12%. You know what 12% of millions are? I mean, there are that many wackos out there that believe it. Let me see. What is it overall? Overall, 8% only. 80% say no. 12% don't know. I mean, you say, do you think that Jews living today, you know, people that live like in Oak Park and West Bloomfield and what have you, say, do you believe that they're responsible for the death of Jesus 2,000 years ago? And 12% go, well, I don't know. I just don't know about that one. And 8% of them say, yeah. Now, it gets a lot better. I mean, people with no religion, only 3%. But I was, what? And for one thing, it's ridiculous. I mean, this whole debate about it, because were the Jews of that era responsible? I mean, the Romans were these horrible imperial masters. They crucified thousands of people. The crucifixion of Jesus wasn't like this big major event or anything like that. They were wiping out people all the time because they were these real tough masters. And I would suspect, given that there wasn't CNN or Fox or NBC at that time, that probably 99% of the Jews living in Palestine at that time had no idea that any of this even occurred. So somehow, and here's where you start getting into the really ominous, bizarre stuff, that Jews are responsible, not the, you know, the, what was his name, Caiaphas? I can't remember. Was responsible, and so what? I mean, what did the, you know, what does this all mean? I mean, this was kind of, you know, they were all Jews, so that there was all this politics and competition among different prophets and all that. I mean, you know, it's a pretty confused period of history. But the idea that people that are, you know, they have this blood guilt, this is why the founding fathers wanted to make this a secular nation, because they had experienced religious madness and persecution, and people put to death because they had the wrong religion. I mean, they may or may not have known of the pogroms, these organized campaigns against the Jews of Europe. They might have known that the hideous crusades of the 12th century, when these soldiers on their way to free the Holy Land, actually, when they got to Jerusalem, these wonderful crusaders, these Christian warriors, slaughtered 30,000 civilians by sword. You know, it was a lot harder in those days. But on their way to Jerusalem, they figured, what the hell? We might as well kill a few Jews while we're at it. So they slaughtered their fellow citizens of Europe along the way as well. So, I mean, religion has an ugly, ugly history, particularly organized religion, particularly patriarchal religion, particularly religion that becomes associated with the political state as well. All right, your thoughts on all of this. Where are we going, Mr. Fox? Thank you so much. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing? This is John from Lake Orion. I smell sausage. That's my opinion about it. But I'd like to change the subject if you don't mind.
Sure.
I was just wondering if you had heard of the Republicans' tax proposal for funding the war next year. Have you heard anything about that?
I don't think they have a plan, other than they're going to tell us a little, you know, after the election.
Oh, well, I thought the word was that they were going to institute a toilet paper tax and a divorce tax to promote marriage. You haven't heard about that?
No. Do you know any more than just that?
No, I'm just surprised that the Republicans have now become the tax and spend party.
Well, they've actually become the other way, John. They're the tax cut. They reduce revenue and then spend more. It'd be like you or me if we lost a job or had our pay cut by like a third, and then we say, well, I got an idea. Let's spend more. Let's just run our credit cards up a little higher.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. And maybe they don't think 25 cents a roll for toilet paper is going to hurt us that bad.
Well, we'll look for that one. Thank you, John. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. CK, listening in Detroit, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, isn't there a difference between someone who is religious and someone who is a Christian? So I love this fact stated by a previous caller. I bet I know more about Christianity than you do because I've read the Bible. I was baptized Catholic, says CK, when I was young, but I don't practice anymore. If anything, I'm probably an atheist now. I believe it was only this change I made that made me see the difference in views throughout the land. It's crazy. Yeah, kind of is. We're going to line four. Is that okay? Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter. This is Joe Cummings. Did you see today's paper where your president wants to outsource the helicopters to England?
No way.
Yes, sir. He said it would make more work for this country.
Yeah, that's the Republican new line, as jobs leave the country. He can't stop that, and it's mostly his corporate buddies that are doing it. So and now they're trying to tell us that it's okay if jobs leave.
Yeah, he said today in the paper. And even the Queen was beckoning him to send the work over there.
I don't, things are getting wackier and wackier, Joe.
It is ridiculous. That man he's gone plumb ape.
Well, one of the things I was asking people, no one really responded to it, but how does Bush figure he's going to pull this out? No one has said, but here's one of the things. They will capture Osama bin Laden before the election, right? They might even have him. I've read that they even have him pretty much surrounded in Afghanistan now, so they'll pull him out at just the time they need him. But what else can he do? All of his poll numbers are dropping, and people...
If you go out there on the in the Texas, he probably got him out there in the desert, out there in one of his holes he's dug out there for him.
Probably so. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you, Peter.
Appreciate it. Here's what James writes in. Sometimes I'm worried because I don't even read this. Although I have joked around with Jewish friends about this, this is ludicrous. Just like I don't think I can be blamed for slavery as a white middle-class teenager, you can't blame Jews today for killing Christ. And what about Jews who convert? Are they still responsible? Just wondering. I think everyone should go watch Dogma. after you go off the air and laugh about it. I just saw that last night with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and some other people. And who's, I can't even think of anybody tonight, the comedian, the guy that was playing the like the Cardinal at the beginning? What? George Carlin, who probably is one of the most irreverent people around. All right, and Rick Fox, our producer and phone screener. Rick, you're going to be on the air tonight? You're not going to be rocking. All right, you can go home and go to sleep. I'm sorry, show me again what line we're going to. Thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Mr. Werby, I heard to talk to you.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, on the lighter side of things, remember when the Omen movies came out?
Yeah.
I didn't hear the Satanists, like, raising all kinds of rabble about, you know, you're making Satan look bad.
Well, you know? There's not a lot of Satanists around.
Oh, well, you know, it's just, you know, diversity of society.
Yeah.
And, I'm a Christian, but I don't believe in the devil.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's,
you know,
cool.
It sounds like, but Satan is like a fairy tale dreamed up by the masses back in the day to keep things in line.
Mm-hmm.
And can I share one verse of the Bible with you?
Sure.
Okay. Genesis 1, verse 12. And the earth brought forth grass and herb-yielding seed after his kind, and tree-yielding fruit whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all bad.
I like that one. Yeah, there are a lot of psalms are nice.
All right, man. Well, you have a great night, all right?
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having joined us. Appreciate that. By the way, in terms of what these Christian right-wingers have, so we're not going to bash Christians. We're going to bash essentially intolerant, mean-spirited, punitive-minded conservatives. That's really who we're winding up with here. There is this bill that's been introduced into the both houses of Congress called the Constitution Restoration Act of 2004. The Constitution Restoration Act 2004. And you have all these right-wingers, mostly Republicans, but including this turncoat Zell Miller of Georgia, supposedly a Democrat, but he's backing Bush. And they have two versions, the House and the Senate. The bill limits the U.S. Supreme Court and federal courts to hear cases involving, quote, expressions of religious faith by elected or appointed officials. It would not allow the court to make to make the decisions that it's charged with under the original Constitution. So these are radical right-wingers, radical in the sense that they're extremists. They want to alter the nature of the American government. And, everybody has a right to do that. I'd like to do it as well. But, we should just be aware of this. Although the claim by its sponsors appears to be that the intention is to prevent the courts from hearing cases involving the Ten Commandments or a nativity scene in a public setting from being reviewed, the law is drawn broadly and expressly includes the acknowledgement of God as the sovereign source of law by an official in his capacity of executing his office. John Giles, the Alabama president of the Christian Coalition, said, quote, the greatest unbridled abuse by the federal judiciary for over 40 years has been in the area of redefining the acknowledgement of God as a sovereign source of law. You know, I thought these guys had some claim to be constitutionalists, that the Constitution and the words of the founding fathers were almost revered to the point of religiosity. But when it doesn't go their way, now, they want to change it. We've talked about that before. They love the Constitution. It's the supreme document. And then the institution charged with making the final arbitration of what passes constitutional muster doesn't go their way. They say, all right, let's change the Constitution. We need a constitutional amendment, you know, about any number of things. Well, all right. Let's go back to our phones. Peter Werby here with you on a night call. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air. Good evening.
Yes, this is James.
Hi, James.
How you doing?
Well.
I just got some comments to make on, just about what you were talking about with the movie Mel Gibson made about Passion.
Yeah.
I'm a Christian, and I just wanted to say that, you know, there really was a Jesus that walked on this earth, and, he died for all of us. And
well, that's what you say. I mean, I don't, whatever. I don't need anybody to die for me.
Well, the thing is, though, I mean, you're saying, like, you don't actually believe that he actually walked on this earth, you know, and then what he did was, you know, is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that I don't. I think that the historical evidence that there was a figure of Jesus as a prophet or whatever at that period is scant. That the books of the Bible were written years and years after the death of the supposed death or whatever, the death. And when I say that confrontationally, because, you know, if you believe things, you should appreciate being challenged and confronted, because then you have to say, oh, yeah, what are you talking about? Here is the historical evidence, because Jesus is cited as a historical figure in the works of and I'm telling you, it ain't there.
There's Roman doctrine that proves that when he was crucified, the day that he was crucified, that he actually did walk on this earth, and also
you're saying that. I defy you to point me to these Roman documents that talk about the existence of Jesus.
Well, I've throughout school, I've studied that in Roman history, that there are proven evidence that he was on this earth, and that he did die at a certain time.
Well, all right. I mean, like I say, that's confrontational on my part. I don't think it changes the argument if there actually was an historical figure or not. Unfortunately, I got to cut this end of it short because I got to get these commercials in. But I will read Paulie's remark here, who sent this email into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Particularly if you're outside of the Detroit area, I'd appreciate it if you'd put what city you're writing from, because it just gives me an idea where people are listening around the country. Paulie says, guess who else is an atheist? Every one-year-old on the planet. And you know what that means. If a one-year-old dies, he's destined to burn with the rest of the unfaithful, like Einstein, Gandhi, and the Dalai Lama. So fundamentalists invented this concept called age of accountability to compensate for the absurdity of this notion of doomed one-year-olds. The only problem is that this concept has no basis in Scripture. If I were a gay sadist, I'd really be turned on by this imagery. I don't know about whatever.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Hey, it's Meltdown Plug-in Joe Pannion Chevrolet. You can buy a Chevy truck at any dealer, but why? Joe Pannion always gives you the unbeatable price on Chevys that are number one. But the cool thing is, they're the only dealer I've ever been to that'll customize your rig as part of the deal. They got wood grain package deals, custom wheels, DVDs, subs, exhaust systems. You got to get the Chevy rumbling. And if you work out of your truck, you need to get to Joe Pannion. They can upfit one with racks, plows, spreaders, anything you need to get the job done. Joe Pannion has it. Take a truck home overnight for the weekend. No pressure to buy. That's right. Just try one out. 866-JOE-1111. Reserve a truck just for fun. I put a ton of miles on one last weekend. Took home this big old sweet truck, and now I'm thinking about taking home a Tahoe or Suburban this weekend as well. Call 866-JOE-1111. Try a brand new Chevy truck for 24 hours. No obligations. Once you see Joe Pannion's trucks, you won't want to go anywhere else. Trust me. Try a no obligation 24-hour test drive. 866-JOE-1111. Put a ton of miles in that thing. Chevrolet, an American revolution.
I finally got around to taking that aptitude test at dintymore.com. Said I ought to be a motivational speaker. No, sounds like a big time commitment to me. Then one day I was making dinner, put a big bowl of Dinty Moore beef stew in the microwave, and I got to thinking, the time I was saving with Dinty Moore could be used to learn motivational speaking. Yeah. Thanks, Dinty Moore. An excellent choice.
Enjoy your day to the fullest and stock up on America's number one beef stew, Dinty Moore Beef Stew, at your local Farmer Jack. Dinty Moore Beef Stew is like a home-cooked meal without the effort. If you're an active skier or happy at home, Dinty Moore Beef Stew is the simple way to enjoy a delicious, well-balanced meal. Just heat and eat, and now it's available at Farmer Jack. Pick up easy, great-tasting Dinty Moore Beef Stew at Farmer Jack today to enjoy a quick meal anytime. Dinty Moore Beef Stew at Farmer Jack, an excellent choice.
99 tax form lines to fill out. 99 tax form lines.
It's taking so long and everything's wrong.
98 tax form lines to fill out. 98 tax form lines to fill out. 98 tax form lines.
You need a master's degree just to do number three.
97 tax form lines to fill out. 97 tax form lines to fill out. 97 tax form lines.
I'd rather have gout than fill this thing out.
96 tax form lines to fill out. 96 tax form lines to fill out. 96 tax form lines.
If I should fail, I'm going to jail.
95
a tax form like to fill out.
This year, don't struggle with your taxes. Let the professionals at Jackson Hewitt Tax Service help you with the new tax laws so you can get the refund you deserve, a bigger one. And in no time at all, you'll be singing a different tune. Call Jackson Hewitt at 1-800-234-1040 and get more in return.
Now get half off your tax preparation by switching from another tax service at all participating Jackson Hewitt locations. Jackson Hewitt's refunds average $400 more than the IRS average refund.
When's the last time you heard snow sizzle?
WSA Snowcross is back in Michigan.
The Arctic Cat Snowcross at the Speedway.
Saturday and Sunday, February 28th and 29th at MIS.
See the best snowcross pilots on the planet.
Mr. Holeshot, Ken Dipson, Launchin, Levi Lavalle, Blair, Super Man Morgan and more as they battle it out for all the glory. Gates open each day at 8 a.m.
with hot WSA racing action at 9:30.
Get your tickets for the Arctic Cat Snowcross at the Speedway online at mispeedway.com or call 800-354-1010.
VIP and motorhome parking also available. The Arctic Cat Snowcross at the Speedway.
February 28th and 29th at MIS. It's a snow flying, sled scraping, snowmobile racing showdown presented by Ford Trucks, Bud Light, and Woody.
Be a part of the action at MIS.
If you like the fast-paced excitement of NCAA Division I basketball, you won't want to miss the Oakland University Golden Grizzlies, led by Oakland's Big Three. Marshall, Scott, and Helms take on the IPFW Mastodons this Wednesday at the O'Rena on the campus of Oakland University. Sponsored by Big Bucks of Auburn Hills. Great food and good times.
Tip-off at 7 p.m.
OU Golden Grizzlies basketball. Free parking and free game programs. It's a rocket good time with reserved seats just $12. General admission only $5 and children under 12 just $2. Halftime promises a chance at $10,000 in the WRIF Hot Shot Contest, plus great getaway packages at the Marriott at Centerpoint and free t-shirts from Primos and Pontiac. Come see the Oakland University Golden Grizzlies take on the IPFW Mastodons this Wednesday at the O'Rena on the campus of Oakland University.
For ticket information, call 248-370-4000 or visit any Ticketmaster outlet.
NCAA Division I basketball on the campus of Oakland University.
Check them out online at OUGrizzlies.com.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Wait, this is the second hour of the Night Call show. At 1 o'clock Eastern Time, we'll be airing interviews I did with Tom Hartman, the author of The Edison Gene, the G-E-N-E, right? About this will be really a boost for all of us ADD folks. Tom Hartman's been on the show a lot before talking about his research about ADD and understanding that it can be a positive skill set, not just a negative, like so many of us have found it. Also with Alexander Sanger, talking about reproductive rights, his grandmother was Margaret Sanger, S-A-N-G-E-R. She was a pioneer in birth control and abortion and incredible woman, very, very radical in the first part of the last century. Now, we're talking about historical evidence of Jesus. Our last caller was talking about the Roman history, and real quickly I did a Google search, and this is probably the most famous. This is at bandoli.no/historicalrecords.htm. I mean, that's too long for anybody to pick up on. Probably the most famous non-Christian source used as, quote, evidence for a historic Jesus is the Roman senator, consul, speaker, and historian Cornelius Tacitus, who lived from 20 to 117 A.D. So he was born 20 years after the birth of Jesus. In a passage in his, Annalist book 15, verse 44, from the year 115 A.D., concerning the Christians, he mentions the name Christ as a subject for the Christian cult. The Christians' cult and worship. He says, Christus, the founder of the name. He goes on quite a bit. Let me see. I guess by had undergone the death penalty in the reign of Tiberius by sentence of Pontius Pilate, and the pernicious superstition, which he's calling Christianity, was checked for a moment, only to break out once more, not merely in Judea, but the home of the disease, but in the capital of Rome itself, where all things horrible or shameful in the world, collect and find a vogue. I mean, that's what this historian said. This is mere hearsay. It's by no means an eyewitness report or usable as evidence of a historical Jesus figure. I mean, if you have the belief, it really doesn't matter. The fact that Mithras, the legend of Mithras, the Persian son of a sun god who was crucified and born on December 25th and all that, and experienced death and then resurrection for the sins of humanity, that Persian myth that predated Christianity by 2,000 years, it doesn't mean anything. If you believe it, you believe it. You know, go with it. But, I mean, don't be shocked when there are, like, jillions of people that don't buy it. Let's see. Oh, yeah, about Ralph Nader announcing his candidacy again. This is pretty interesting, although it's outdated because Ralph Nader has announced he is going to run. There's a website called Ralph Don't Run, without the apostrophe and don't. RalphDon'tRun.net. He says, if you don't want Ralph Nader to run in 2004, go to this website. I guess they're going to present him with all of the things, you know. Gary in Windsor writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. As a fellow atheist, I agree with you completely about the controversy regarding Gibson's movie, The Passion. However, let's not diminish the impact that anti-Semitism is having globally. Well, it's the opposite, Gary. I mean, the charge is that Gibson's film is increasing this. Unfortunately, some of our friends on the left are guilty of blurring the line between criticism of Israel and blatant anti-Semitism. I sure think that that's not true, Gary, at all. I hear that sometimes. I mean, people often equate criticism of... people have called me anti-Semitic because of my criticism of Israel, and I say that almost everything I've ever learned critical of Israel comes from Israeli peace groups that are centered, some in the United States, but mostly in Israel. And in fact, some of those people are called self-hating Jews because they won't go along with the continued occupation and settlement of the West Bank and Gaza. So I don't think that some of our friends on the left are guilty of blurring the line between criticism of Israel and blatant anti-Semitism at all. I'm not trying to say everyone on the left is free from anti-Semitism, but anti-Semitism is a disease of the right. Discrimination, intolerance, prejudice, it lives on the conservative right and farther right than that, of which conservatives never feel any uncomfortableness with. Rick Fox, our next caller is online, too. Thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Well, thanks.
Yeah, I'm just calling in regards to the comment that you made about the Passion. My name is Joe, and I've been a Christian for like 8 years, and you know, I live life without him, and now I'm living my life with him. And I just have to confess that life without him was hopeless. And you know, now that I know him and have a relationship with him, I can't fathom how someone can believe that there's no God. And I just want to ask you, do you believe that there's a God?
No, absolutely not. Why should I? What suggests to you? See, well, I got to tell you this, Joe. I mean, I belonged to this humanist group in college, and so when I was a sophomore, we'd go around and debate Christians about existence of God and, you know, first causality and all this stuff. So, I mean, you know, this is my... let me suggest to you, I mean, since I was just reading the Bible tonight, why don't you do yourself a favor and read Bertrand Russell, one of the great philosophers of the 20th century. He wrote a book called Why I Am Not a Christian. Check that out. I mean, challenge your basic beliefs. I love to do that.
Sure, I love it too. My question for you is do you, let's take some you know, technologically advanced item, say the stealth bomber.
The what?
The stealth bomber. We'll talk about the stealth bomber and all the circuitry and the computers and all the hours and hours and years that it took man to, you know, put this thing together so that it would fly.
Yeah.
It's so complex and intricate, yet it doesn't even come remotely close to the complexity of our brains. And we haven't begun to understand the human brain.
Right, right, right.
How it works. And so how can you say that there's not a designer?
Wait a minute. I don't understand how the existence of some complex mechanism, whether it's our body, which, I mean, you know, there are mysteries that cannot be answered. I mean, And to think, I mean, I don't know how you go from complexity to design. I mean, there is a logical leap there that makes no sense whatsoever. You've already come to it. This is inductive reasoning. You have your answer in advance, and you look for ways to prove it. I believe in God. Let's see. How do I prove? Well, the human brain is complex. Well, there's more proof. Go the other way around. You have a complex organism, anything from, you know, the leaf of a plant to a human being. Why does that suggest a designer? Are you with me? Huh. Now, well, that's what used to happen when we used to argue with people in college. We would always blow these young Christians out of the water, because eventually you got to say, if you have a faith in something, whether it's Jesus or Hinduism or, you know, or whatever, you got to say, you know, I feel it, I believe it, and that's it. Try to, you know, going for the reigning manner in which we accept the existence of things, how we prove things, you can't do it. You can't do it, because there's nothing there that will work for you. Just got to say, I believe it, you know, and it works for me, and I have a personal relationship with my Savior, and I'm going to heaven, and you're going to hell. And, you know, that's it. There's not a single argument for the, and this has all been done. I mean, people were, arguing this stuff in the 19th century. I mean, part of it is on an ethical basis. In the 19th century, they'd argue, if God is dead, everything is permissible and nothing is prohibited. We can eat our children and what have you. Well, the harm, the murder, the vile things that have been done to people in the name of religion certainly pale before the other way around. I mean, the responsibility for living a good moral, ethical life is thrust upon you then. And the codes are there. I mean, it's very easy. One, I mean, I always say that there's a philosophy called existentialism, that existence occurs before essence. This is getting too weird. In other words, you're born a blank slate, and then culture implants certain ideas to you. Like, if you're born in some other culture, Christianity, you know, you've never even heard of this. I mean, now, modern communication, yeah, but there's still places in the world people have never heard of this. Very frequently, when they hear the story, they go, wow, this is wild. But the story has apparently some attraction. But you then, if you're living in a world that doesn't have that external coherence, you as an individual, connected up with a community, are responsible for then making meaning of it. And people say, what is the meaning of life? I don't know. I mean, Bertrand Russell, the philosopher, said, what do you mean by the meaning of life? We are here. And it is a mystery. And some people settle that mystery or maybe even most people. I don't know. People always say, oh, you know, I'm religious. I think that the literal interpretation of the Bible is what's really happened, but it doesn't have I think just a minority of people does it really energize their life. Mostly, if you go to people and say, "Do you believe in the literal interpretation of the Bible?" They go, "Yeah, sure, yeah." You know, you believe that there's a big flood and Noah got all the animals 2x2 on it. Yeah, sure. Then let's go back to watching the football game. Where was it? Oh, yeah, individual responsibility. So existentialism says, when you make a choice, you as the individual, all of you listening, you have to make like universal choices, because what you choose implies that as for everyone. But and after a while, boy, aren't I smart. I learned about existentialism in college, even if I didn't graduate. And I still, one of those intellectual pursuits. But actually, it's all... what you need to live on the planet is really embedded in just that simple little truism about do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that's what existentialism is when you just strip it all away. You just want to live in a world in which it's run by the precepts of how you would like to be treated yourself. But instead, it's wars. And I mean, think about these religious wars. Because they're the infidels, they're the wrong religion, all that. Man. Line 3, are we going to? Yeah. things. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Doing good.
I'm Brian. My name is Brian. I'm from New Baltimore. I'm a Christian, and I'm a socialist, which is kind of branded me an outcast in many churches I've tried to go to when I was, talking to people. It seems that a broad majority of Christians are conservatives or Republicans, and it kind of puzzles me. As far as the whole faith thing goes, as being a Christian, it comes down to me with the thing of faith and experiences in my life. So I didn't really want to get into that as much. I kind of wanted to relate it to the political spectrum.
Brian, let me just interrupt you 1 second.
Yeah.
Christian socialism has a grand history in this country. A very famous woman whose name was Dorothy Day, who began what they called the Catholic Worker Movement, is an interesting person to look up. Also, all of a sudden I can't think of his first name, but the man who wrote the Pledge of Allegiance was a Christian socialist.
Francis Bellamy.
Was it Francis Bellamy?
Yes, it was.
Okay, good. You're right.
Yes.
Actually, there was he had a brother that was a famous writer who wrote these utopian novels as well.
Oh, yes. They're very good novels, too. Since you're on that point of the Pledge of Allegiance, the original Pledge of Allegiance was, I pledge allegiance to my flag and for which it stands, and it says nothing about God in it. They changed it in the early 20s because of the immigrant flood. They wanted them to relate it to the United States, not to their old homeland. And actually, it was a very conservative, anti-communist, the American Legion, actually, who pushed through in the late 50s, who got Eisenhower to sign to add the words under God into it. And Francis Bellamy, actually, who wrote that, he was a Christian socialist. And, it kind of puzzles me that if a pastor who was actually, he was actually kicked out of many churches for preaching a sermon called Jesus the Socialist, and which I totally believe myself, that's, I try to live my life like Christ, and that's why I'm a socialist. If you look in the teachings of the Bible, I think it's pretty cut and dry how he thought of things, you know what I'm saying?
Sure. I mean, there is any number of historical figures, particularly in the United States, but in Europe as well, who saw Jesus as the basis for their socialist beliefs. And now there's many, many people in the peace and social justice movement in this country that, although they might not directly call themselves socialists, but still believe in the message of social justice preached by Christ. I mean, that's why he was, I've seen things, Jesus revolutionary, and that he was put to death by the authorities because he challenged both temporal and religious authority in his lifetime.
Oh, yes, and I'd have to take the side of many atheists on the whole Pledge of Allegiance issue that was brought up, I think it was the last year, by the California man about his daughter.
Right.
Because if my whole view of it is, if a Baptist minister wrote the Pledge of Allegiance and he did not write the words under God in it, who are we 100 years plus years later to add those words, first of all? And second of all, isn't that a kind of a breach of church and state by putting the words under God?
I would think so.
Under Allah or under Buddha, what I'm saying?
Yeah. It seems inappropriate. I mean, they put that in the 1950s. It combined religious and anti-communist hysteria, and somehow they wanted under God put in the Pledge of Allegiance. So I don't know what. So they wouldn't confuse us with godless communists. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, all that stuff just frightens the hell out of me.
Me as well. Me as well. And I another thing I wanted to get in real quick is George Bush, our president right now, who kind of prides himself as throwing the term around me being a Christian, and he's really proud of it and such. Well, I was talking to Rick earlier, and this man sent more people to death row than any governor in the history of the United States of America. This man has the insider trading scandal he was involved with, You know what I'm saying? In the mid-90s, I believe it was?
Sure, early 90s, actually. And Bush's business scandals are another set of issues that are below the radar. Now, fortunately, his AWOL status has come out. So, I mean, that's eroded his standing as it, well, that it should have. And hopefully now that the media in the United States has stopped being so slavish to this pretender to the throne, who sits illegally, as far as I'm concerned, in the Oval Office, that they'll get into some of his business scandals as well. Hey, Brian, I got to move on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter. Have a great night.
All right, you too. Now, I can't. This is one of these things is way too long, but Mike, listening in Annapolis, Maryland, says that there are, and he gives me all these lists here. There are other pieces of supporting evidence that there was, in fact, an historical Jesus. I'll leave that for you to discover. Some of this stuff, when it gets too long, I can't read it all. He said, "I appreciate your confidence in your assertion that Jesus did not exist. I didn't assert that. He can't assert that somebody did not exist. I'm saying if you're making, you're the person has to make the assertion. The onus of proof is on you. I don't have to prove anything. You have to prove it if you say Jesus was an historic figure. All right? You can't just say, well, it says in the Bible. And he lists several things, some of which I was surprised." That even mentioned. But anyways, he said there are the proofs there, and I will read your message later. It came to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, so you can, I'm even what they call flagging it, Mike. I'm putting a flag on it, so I'll be sure to remember it. All right, moving onward. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
I've been listening to you for years, so I'm a Christian, but me debating with you whether there is a God or not is kind of a waste of both of our times. I know how you feel on it. You asked for other historical proof of Jesus. One of the most probably famous ones was a Roman historian called Josephus. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Or Josephus, yeah. But, okay. You know, all right, go ahead, sorry.
Well, he lived around the time that Jesus was in Jerusalem. And the writing of what he wrote was a very small portion of it that just basically, I don't have it in front of me, but it was just basically that there was a man at the time living in Jerusalem who claimed to be the Son of God, and they basically crucified him, which was a normal common thing for the Romans because they did it to who knows how many people. So he didn't make a big deal out of the fact that there was, because obviously he wasn't Jewish or Christian. But there's other, I mean, if you study and really look into it, there are other historical evidence of it. As far as the movie goes, I don't find it offensive, obviously, because I'm a Christian, but, you know, there's been a lot of movies that have been made going against Christianity, and as a Christian, I'm not going to cause a big fuss about it. I don't think it's basically, if you look at it from a logical point of view, is the Bible's a book. Whether you believe it or not, that it's the Word of God is your own decision. All the man did was made a movie based on one of the chapters, basically, in a book, and he went by the book.
Well, how about this? I'm not going to see it. You, I mean, it sounds so grotesque. I mean, these, the vivid imagery of this, you know, the hideous torture of this man. Hey, I think, you know, I'm going to let you have the last word on, the historic existence of Jesus. Let me say that including the Josephus sighting is that there has always been this debate, which I don't think gets any of us too far away, although I raised it, so it's my fault, about the historic existence of Jesus or not. But, you can cite Tacitus and Josephus and all those people, and there, you know, there's refutations of it. These people, these people that spend all their time being atheists, there's like an American Atheist Association and all that, they've got answers to all of that.
Well, you know what? It basically boils down to this, that it's all faith, okay? Any religion is faith.
There you go.
I could sit here and say to a Muslim, prove to me that Muhammad was here. I could sit here and say, whether or not, I don't care how much writing there is, That was written, I could say, well, that was written 2,000 years ago. You, the religion, mess with it. Just like everybody says about Christianity, it's all basically faith because it's an unwinnable argument.
All right, I agree.
With you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, have a good one.
Appreciate it. Where would he have been with all that train? Probably Royal Oak. If you're in downtown Royal Oak, man, you can be in some of these bars, and all of a sudden it sounds like the train. I mean, some of the I've been, what's the name of that bar? That's where the Fifth Avenue is, but there's another bar across the street, and you are like 20 feet from the train going by, and it's, you know, blowing its horn like that. Maybe that's where he was. Anyways, Ron from Warren writes in the call talk yes at yahoo.com, getting back to Led Zeppelin being Satanist and doing backward masking and betting, I love Satan. You know, I shouldn't do that. I mean, that'll freak people out. You know how to work this machine in here, this voice distorter? You can really. Is it even on? I'll try to do that. Anyway, Ron writes in the call talk yes at yahoo.com. He says, regarding the Led Zeppelin connection to Aleister Crowley, Jimmy Page was an avid student of Crowley, as was L. Ron Hubbard of Scientology fame, Kenneth Anger, who wrote Hollywood Babylon, H.P. Lovecraft. I knew him from something else. I know a student of Aleister Crowley. According to the friend, Crowley was a mystic, magician, and drug fiend. not a mere Satanist. He says, please email back some info. What was the name of the Persian figurehead you spoke of tonight, whose life strongly parallels that of Christ? Well, it was Mithras. You can just go to Google. That's what I did. Mithras. Mithras. He was born on December 25th. The whole thing. Virgin birth, crucifixion and resurrection, judgment day deal, book of the dead, the faithful will rise, 12 disciples, buried in a cave, and then, you know, rose again, ascended to heaven. And this people disparaging the Christian religion say that this was just adopted wholesale. The imagery was already there and well known because, you know, the ancient world, those myths lasted a long time. All right, we're going to line 6. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hey, are you with me? Our first dropout tonight. Up to line 1, leaving an open line at 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air. Good evening. All of a sudden, am I doing anything wrong here? Let me see. I can always try it like this. Nope, they're just dropouts. All right, a lot of open lines now. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I've been listening to your show for about a month now, and I love it.
Well, thank you.
And I just bought the book God and Religion by Bertrand Russell.
Really?
Yeah. Haven't gotten into it yet, but I'm having a tough time with this whole religious right stuff, and I'm actually going to get a sticker made, excuse me, that has elect in 2004 George Carlin, Bill Maher, bringing common sense back to America. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on those two people and their, you know, supposed influence on religion and what you thought of that.
Well, I love George Carlin, and Maher is okay. I mean, I think he does good work. I'm glad he's out there. But Carlin is amazing, absolutely amazing. He's one of my faves.
Yeah, he really makes some interesting points. And, you know, I'm an atheist or agnostic, whatever you want to say, and I love your show. And
well, thank you. I mean, after a while, I mean, some people there's a group called Freedom. What is it called? Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Yep, got the website up.
And they're really good folks, and they're nice people. One of the guys, let me see, Dan Barker, actually used to be a fundamentalist minister, wrote all these hymns, Christian hymns. He still gets royalties from. He was a boy preacher, and now he's an atheist. And yet, I mean, it's kind of a quirky. I'm sorry if I'm stepping on any toes here as well. I mean, I'm apologizing earlier for stepping on religious toes. Now I'm apologizing if I'm stepping on atheist toes. But it's kind of a, I don't know. Someone says that they spend all their time organizing around atheism. I mean, I'm thinking, well, come on. You know, there's wars. There's people starving. There's
exactly
rampant disease. I mean, this is good to talk about. I mean, my fear with this Gibson movie, it's going to set off a wave of irrationality.
Absolutely.
Because people's inability to deal with what's happening in this world to us. And rather than trying to grasp it as a community, they're going, as happened before in American history, they're just going to have some great huge revival is going to happen. And you know what will be the result of it? Nothing.
Right. Yep, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
All right, thanks, Peter.
Appreciate it. Let's see. Neil, writing from Albuquerque, New Mexico, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. My favorite passage from the Bible, quote, prove all things and hold fast to that which is good, close quote. He says, I try to live my life by that passage in the Golden Rule. Remember, do unto others, right? My religion is similar to that expressed by Benjamin Franklin in Articles of Faith and Acts of Religion, which I don't know. It is interesting reading, can be found on the web. I will check it out. And he quotes another very interesting writer, Albert Camus, looks like Camus, C-A-M-U-S. Albert Camus, the welfare of humanity is always the alibi of tyrants. That's very interesting. I'm doing this for the good of humanity. Huh.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways.
Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air.
Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today.
Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream. It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
What a great time talking to Billy Bob Thornton about his new movie, Bad Santa.
And you've brought anal sex into the mainstream.
Well, I do what I can for the cause.
I like the idea that not only have you brought that into the mainstream, but it's on fat chicks as well.
That's right.
Okay, so who's PO'd about the movie? Somebody's got to be bitching about it.
They got to stir up controversy about everything. All of a sudden, it's like, it's a Santa Claus movie, and he's like cursing, and it's not about Santa Claus. It's about a con artist.
Yeah,
right.
I have to tell you, I appreciated John Ritter, but I didn't realize he had as much range as he had until you worked with him.
I was really proud of the fact that I got to put him in a movie that showed him as an actor.
What was his famous line? Was it? we're gonna have to bleep this. He said, "Stick." Was that it?
Yeah. I also like the part where he says he's talking about what he heard, overheard at the big and tall. and he can't even say the word. He spells it.
Oh, yeah, about another anal sex reference.
That's right.
I ain't listening to you no more.
Stop it!
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101 WRIF.
Shouting at me.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like McVee's on Telegraph Road in Southfield. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We got some great celebrity phone numbers. We had to try them. First, we called the 49ers' Terrell Owens, and then Brian Urlacher's girlfriend, Paris Hilton.
You have reached the Sprint voice mailbox of...
81.
To leave a voice message, press 1.
Terrell, this is Jeff Garcia. I just want to say I'm not supposed to have a little cry with you the other day. It was really nice seeing you cried, too, because then I knew you cared. I love you. Bye, Tio. Giving him rides
before. Hey, it's Paris. My screen is broken on my phone, so therefore I cannot read any of the numbers on it.
So make sure to leave a member with a message, and I will get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Paris, it's 54 here. Big Brian. Just think about putting it in your butt. Boom! Always say PH. How about a big 5-4? Up the old eight. Yeah, I was thinking of running a post pattern right up the middle. When I see a hole, you know me, I got to plug it up. Didn't mean to total a damn thing.
Good thing you love it.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Rick.
That's Rick.
101.1
WRIF. Ow, you're shouting at me.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like the Shark Club on Ford Road in Canton. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We did a Harris poll asking people named Harris if, in fact, they were uncomfortable talking about their reproductive organs, which is what the latest study said.
Is it a difficult subject matter, though?
Not with.
Okay. So if you had, say, a 2-inch by 2-inch cyst on your testicle or something like that, you would not have a problem going over that with your doctor.
That could be one way to put it. Let's see what else we have here. This is Matthew listening in Sioux City, Iowa. He wrote into Call Talk Yes at yahoo.com. .com. Tonight during the Screen Actor Guild Awards, Tim Robbins asked his fellow union members to stop the outsourcing of Hollywood jobs, that we need to keep the jobs here in the U.S. As you know, the jobs are being outsourced because corporateers are getting away with nearly everything they want thanks to Bush. They say they can't compete using our labor. And he talks about then about religion, and in Deuteronomy chapter 22, 13 to 21, verses, there is all this stuff, like a marriage shall be considered valid only if the wife is a virgin. If the wife is not a virgin, she shall be executed. There's all this kind of stuff. I think it's all in Deuteronomy that anti-biblical people often cite. I mean, pretty bloody, terrible stuff. He asks, do your Bible-thumping callers follow every word in the Bible to the letter? Just asking. Matthew in Sioux City, Iowa. All right, we're back to the phones. Hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. How are you tonight?
Doing well, thanks.
I've been listening to you for longer than either of us would care to admit, I'm sure.
Okay.
First time I've called in. And I noticed the caller before me had a hard time in distinguishing the difference between atheist and agnostic. And I'd like to tell you why I think atheists have it just as wrong as Christians, only because they say something unequivocally. There is no God, or there is a God in the sense of Christians. Whereas I believe agnostics have the right answer because we just don't know.
Well, but, yeah, I mean, I understand what you mean. I mean, obviously, then I'm an agnostic because I don't know. But the thing is, one, you're a theist or an atheist, right? I mean, without. So in many ways, an agnostic is an atheist, right? I mean, I don't want to start getting into really...
But open to the idea that there may be something, a power bigger than us, not necessarily a... conscious power that understands its place in the universe and its relationship with us, but we don't understand everything. Even the powers we think we understand, I don't think we fully understand.
Oh, well, I agree. And this whole, I mean, if you think about it, being in a universe, what's on the other side of the universe? All these things, you know, this whole idea of the Big Bang. And what are they thinking now? How it's going to end? Is it the big, God, I just saw that. I can't remember. It's all, you know, I mean, I just have to keep focusing on my daily life to make some sense of it. Now, what does make sense to me is the way that pre-technological or what we call primitive people made sense of life through these mythopoetic, what would you say, rituals, about, and invested almost everything with, you know, spirit or gods. So that there were, you know, gods in streams and trees and, you know, everywhere. That, I mean, that makes some sense.
Just remember, that for which we do not have the answer is always God.
Yeah, but, you know.
We find out otherwise.
But also, there's here's another problem with the type of spirituality that you adhere to. If you think everything has a sacred quality to it because we're all interconnected, that the world can be sort of schematicized, if you will, by a circle, that all, everything, every animal, all inanimate objects hold hands in a metaphorical sense, then you know how they always have that kind of cheesy thing in Hollywood movies where the Native American kills a deer and says, "Thank you, little sister, for giving your life so that I may live," and all that. I mean, that's actually real. There was a sense that there was a connectedness between this human and that animal. It's not like we're getting it at Kroger's in some shrink-wrapped package after this thing was raised in some hideous factory farm. When the gods leave the earth and become sky gods, they become male, they develop a hierarchy, they become punitive, and they're aligned with tyrannical political states.
Well, that's because we created God in our
yeah.
image.
Yeah.
I mean, he has to be that way because that's how we are.
And if you then see, if the circle is cleaved and the institution of the political state arises, and with a few footnotes, like this country and a few other things over the last couple hundred years, the political state has almost exclusively been a racket to protect the wealth and privilege of the wealthy, the elite of a society. And to some extent, it's true here as well. And and one of the ways that this relationship is made to look eternal is through the mystification of religions, because you know they don't. I mean, the state at its essence is an armed body of men. I mean, that's what protects, like the property relations, the disproportionate distribution of income and all that. So initially, you had these. I was talking about, you can kind of see like a pyramid. There were actual pyramids. There were what they called these ziggurats. And before, everybody was pretty much equal in societies. I mean, people had specific roles sometimes as hunting chiefs or war chiefs or what have you. But there was a good deal of egalitarianism, of equality. So how are you going to justify that suddenly there is this small little clique of rulers that say they have absolute control over everybody? Well, you got to get the religion racket into it to say this is ordained by the spiritual powers. The reason that some rule and others are ruled is because that's the spiritual order of things. Well, I'm not very interested in a religion that says that.
Absolutely. I think religion has outlived its usefulness. We've got our moral code. We know what's right and wrong. I don't think it's really a necessary thing any longer.
Thank you so. Appreciate it.
Have a nice night.
You too. Bye now. Ron, listening in Fort Wayne, Indiana, writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Keep in mind that the Romans, not the Jews, are the ones who wanted Jesus Christ's hide. Does the name Pontius Pilate ring a bell? Yeah, but, you know, there was a direct connection between in some of the Gospels about saying that blame our people forever or something. I can't remember that in Mark, I think. And that's why, and as I said earlier, that in Europe, Jews dreaded the advent of Easter, because the crucifixion story was told again in which the Jews were blamed. And then, you know, the faithful would go out and attack Jews, burn, you know, their, you know, great Christian compassion. What was I thinking? Some of the good things, yeah. Fat Tuesday coming up, which precedes Ash Wednesday, which is when this Mel Gibson film is going to be released. And I was listening to this ad, and I don't know, that cream-filled or fruit-filled donut that I called a punchki. On the ad, they said it a little different. But, hey, that's one of the good things of religion. We get to eat those things this coming Tuesday. I'm off to Hamtramck for mine, as I always do. You go to, I can't remember the, I'm not remembering a lot tonight. I didn't remember that Jimmy, who in Led Zeppelin was into what, what do we do? We don't want to call him a devil or Satan worshiper. What do we call him? Occult. Jimmy Page and Aleister Crowley. Now I can't remember the name of the bakery in Hamtramck, the famous one where the line will be out the door and you say, I want 3 dozen punch keys. Whew. Wow. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Pete. Yes, hello.
Hi.
I didn't think I would make it.
Well, here you are. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate
it. Well, first of all, I have to admit you are a very intelligent man and by far much more intelligent than me, humanly, definitely. But I did want to make a comment on, I guess, the Mel Gibson movie.
Sure.
I haven't seen it yet, and I am looking forward to seeing it. I was just curious. I guess I'm going to ask this question to you. If you don't take the Bible, which you don't, because you said you don't believe in God, as your criterion for the truth, what do you use for your your plan for your life? What do you use?
Well, I mean, or like moral code, or I think the last caller kind of hit it. I mean, there has been a tradition in the West of certain ethical precepts that we all adhere to. Some of them have been codified into the Ten Commandments. Once you get by all the ones that God is, you know, saying, I'm a jealous God, I have no other gods before me, and all that. You know, you shouldn't steal, you shouldn't bear false witness, you respect the elders in your community, and what have you. I mean, all those ideas are there, and I don't think that Christians carry them out any better than anybody else. I mean, certainly, you want to look at the Crusades or the Inquisition, you know, those are pretty awful things. So having a spiritual belief, or a belief in this case in the West in Jesus, doesn't seem to imbue people with any particularly high moral qualities, as far as I can see. But again, I'm some of the best people I know. I said that in our community act out of their Christian faith.
Yeah, that's true. Like I said, I guess obviously you went to college and you did a lot of studying on humanism and probably psychology, and so what is that? What you use as a basis on deciding what path you're taking in your life? Or?
Well, I guess so, but I mean, actually, I pretty much got it probably from the same place you did, and all of us did, from my parents who expected who were these generous, tolerant, my dad's still alive, good people who wanted a peaceful world, who believed in fairness and that kind of stuff. So,
okay. Yeah, I can agree with that, although I personally, my parents were wonderful, but as far as using something for now, because both my parents are gone, so, you know, what they left behind, of course, was great values, but there has to be something more, you know, to guide you through. I mean, there's so much, there's bad, there's good, but there's a lot of bad. You could get really depressed, you know, about all the bad. I guess what I'm asking is, you are an atheist, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you probably had to have things like something to feel or hear or touch in order to believe. Is that a good assumption? Or
to believe what?
To believe in, like, even an experiment, like you did maybe an experiment in high school.
Oh, yeah?
Like if you did something.
Can I tell you, I mean, I'm sorry, this is presumptuous on my part, but if you're going off in the direction I think you are to prove the existence of God, I don't think you're going to be successful.
No, I'm not. No, there's no way. There's no way I could do that. You know, there's no way anybody could prove to somebody if you don't have any faith to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Like your other callers, definitely, that's been an issue is faith. So.
Well, my parents didn't believe in God, and my mother's side they didn't, and on my dad's side, he was raised for a while as a Methodist, and just sort of fell away from it, and particularly when he met my mother, this beautiful young woman who didn't believe in God.
Oh, and there's nothing wrong with that, except for I guess I would say that if I were to tell you, knowing from the years of me personally, I am a Christian and I've studied the Bible, if I were to say to you you said it yourself. Again, you already said it. You know where you're going then, when you leave this world. You do know where you're going, right?
Nowhere.
Yeah. Well, you're going to a place that's not very nice.
Really?
Really, yeah.
Wait. I hope at least I come across as a decent and inquisitive person. So if I don't have a set of beliefs that, it just doesn't work. I mean, I get condemned just because, I made a mistake?
No, you have, everybody has a choice. Like you said, we're all born with volition. We're all, we have a choice while we're here. Eternal life is yours to have. I can quote scripture.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't. I can only paraphrase. I'm not good at
it. I got you. But that's kind of brutal. They talk about, in some of the religions in Asia, they talk about reincarnation. And that kind of appeals to some Americans that go, I don't got to worry about dying because I'll get reborn. Most of those religions, in fact, I would say the reincarnation that exists in these Asian religions is not something that people look forward to. What they want to do is get off the wheel of life. I can't remember. I'm not remembering even rock and roll tonight, but there's a George Harrison song where he sings about something. There's something in the song about it. So if you mess up, if you don't understand, if you don't get off the wheel of life, you're born again into the misery of living and dying. And it isn't this can go on for eternity. So in a sense, life is hell. But this one chance only deal, I go, well, it's not, it's not like, Jesus is knocking on my door or, there's a bolt from heaven and God's saying, I'm here. And I'm going, I don't want anything to do with you. I mean, it doesn't come in. I mean, you don't believe the Hindus or the, or the Muslim faiths. And they might say the same thing. Well, Muslims wouldn't, but the Hindus would think you're off in la la land because it's only Hinduism that's the real religion. They would tell you and probably want to. And so, huh?
Are you still there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going to say, what is, when we define religion, I would define religion as man's way of trying to reach God, where true Christianity is a relationship with Jesus Christ. And there's nothing you or I could ever do to get to heaven. The movie that Mel Gibson made, they're saying that it's supposedly true from what the Bible, but there is nothing you and I could do except for that one small second in your life where you say, I believe in Jesus Christ as my Savior. Because all the other religions have attached with it something you have to do, or you have to give money, Christianity is just that one second of your life saying, I accept him as my Savior, I'm a sinner, I've done wrong, and I, before I forget, my 15-year-old daughter wants to know, wanted to know what you thought about how did you ever get here? Like, how did man ever, she wanted me to ask you if, how did you ever get here?
Well, I mean, not me, but I mean the human species?
Yeah. Well,
Little something called evolution. Hey, do this for me. I'm sure you'll be glad to accommodate me on this. Some of my Christian friends tell me they'll pray for me.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. I would do the same for you, too, because I know that God wants no one to go and perish. And absolutely, my husband had a good friend that he in the military that he got to know and couldn't, there's no way I can convince you, there's no way. I'm not. I was not calling to do that. I guess.
No, I appreciate your call.
You were very intelligent. It was good to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye now. Yeah. I mean, what the daughter was going for was. I am. Maybe I'm glad it's almost 1 o'clock. What is the cause? It is the final causality argument. You can go back and you say, well, what caused you? My parents. What caused your parents? You go back, well, where did the human species come in? And ultimately, and as they keep, they want to keep drawing you back even to the origins of the universe. And you say, well, I don't know. Where did the universe come from? And they say, God. And then you say, well, you've just established a system of causality. What caused God? And they go, oh, God is the uncaused cause. To which I say, I'm willing to admit to your system of causality, but suddenly you arbitrarily say it stops here. Doesn't work. Anyways, Case, who wrote from Marlette, and I asked where it was. He's 70 miles north of Detroit in the heart of the Thumb. Nice area. Said, been a big fan, been listening for about 5 years, love the show. Thank you so much. All right, do we have time for one more call? We do indeed. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hey, Pete.
Hi.
Hey, actually, kind of feel honored to be the last call tonight. It's really weird. As opposed to trying to do what everyone else did tonight and prove the existence of Christ, I'd rather go ahead and not really disprove it, but like prove that maybe religion actually exists, not so much Jesus, but God itself.
Okay.
Are you familiar with, the city of Babylon and whatnot?
The city of Babylon?
Yeah. No, Babel. Babel, not Babylon.
What?
The city of, the biblical city of Babel, where all the peoples of the world came together.
Oh, Babel, yeah.
Yeah, they created one language and whatnot.
Right, right.
And that pissed God off, and he separated them all.
Yeah.
So I think that was really the start of the confusion between religions. But I do believe the flood actually existed. You know, the flood happened.
Right.
And that God would have created it, you know. But, I mean, the flood... Now, I'm not saying that you can really prove the flood happened, but there's too many different, you know... It's mentioned in too many different religions. Like, in Sumeria, Enlil was... You know, instead of Noah, it was Enlil. I mean, it's even in Chinese mythology. It's in Greek and Roman. But I forgot the name of the guy you had mentioned earlier. Mesopotamian guy, it was supposed to be in relation to Christ?
Oh, Mithras.
Mithras, all right.
Mithras, yeah. Mithras. I just did a Google search and found him.
Oh, okay, that's cool. No, I was going to say, you're probably not going to find much on the information of Christ's life, because way after he lived, I don't know, about 700 years after he lived, when Emperor Nero was in Rome, he burned the library, which hold all the census books. But, I mean, the entire
chronological, yeah?
Yeah, existence of Christ has been messed up from the beginning. I mean, he was never in the Bethlehem census. He was in Judea when he was 15. He was finally, even though he was 8, he was finally entered. Even in the Bible, he disappears from the time he was 13 till he was in his late 20s. So where I personally think he was going around to different... different lands trying to preach his father's name.
Some people say he went, there's some stories that he went even as far as Japan.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, too.
I mean, like, for real, that's out there.
Well, I mean, because that would explain how in so many different cultures there is, the Son of God, or even if, even with, like, you know, polytheistic cultures, I think there's still, it's based on the person's perception of what happened.
Well, it is, and there's a lot of cross-cultural similarities between all of this, and some people might say, well, that proves it. So, proves I got to get out of here. Thank you so much for being our last caller, although I will give it off to Sean, who writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Love your show. I wanted to point out to your agnostic caller, a strong atheist holds that God does not exist. A weak atheist does not believe in any God or gods. An agnostic isn't sure. Was your agnostic caller agnostic with regards to the Easter Bunny? How about Santa? After all, if you can't prove they don't exist. Sean says he's a weak atheist from Warren. All right, let's do this. I enjoyed all this, but enjoyed it in the sense that we all had a chance to look at our beliefs and hopefully have them challenge. That whenever you bring up arguments, they, even though I don't give a centimeter, I mean, I think about what you're saying and what you write me. But let's not bring it up again next week, okay? I don't want to endlessly talk about this stuff. A number of you sent me long emails. I'm going to look at those. I'm going to look at some of your historic references. So none of this was wasted. None of it was lost. Thank you so much. We'll talk again next week.
Spring is only 4 weeks away. Are you ready? Hi, this is Scott Jenny at Joe Lunghammer Chevrolet. We're getting ready for spring, and it's our goal at Joe Lunghammer Chevrolet to make this spring a memorable one. We are taking 50% off the original MSRP on select 2003 vehicles. That's right, it's the Think Spring Sale, and you can save up to $11,000 in Buick Centuries. We have 2003 Aleros, Grand Ams, Cavaliers, and Malibus, all priced below $10,000. Due to the high demand for these vehicles, we can only offer this deal for a short time. Joe Lunghammer Chevrolet's half-off Think Spring Sale starts this Thursday, February 19th, and will end Monday, February 23rd at 6 p.m.
Joe Lunghammer Chevrolet, located behind Summit Place Mall in Waterford. Open Friday, February 20th, and Saturday, February 21st from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. Also open every weekday till 9 p.m.
Please give our sales staff a call at 248-683-7100. Think Spring and get to Joe Lunghammer Chevrolet's half-off Think Spring Sale this Thursday through Monday. Our phone number again is 248-683-7100. That's Joe Lunghammer Hammer Chevrolet. Be ready.
The economy is improving, and that's certainly good news for all of us. But, as you know, in a better economy, higher interest rates can come back overnight. Hi, this is Ray Vinson, founder of American Equity Mortgage. Right now, we're still offering a low 3.75% rate. So before rates jump up, ask American Equity Mortgage about that 3.75%. Whether you're a homeowner with perfect or less than perfect credit, American Equity Mortgage can help you consolidate your high-interest credit cards and other debt into one low-interest loan with one low monthly payment. American Equity Mortgage makes it fast and easy for you to save hundreds of dollars every month. Don't delay. Call today, because I can't say how much longer we'll have 3.75%. Call now, 888-229-7699. Call American Equity Mortgage now at 888-229-7699. 888-229-7699.
Rate subject to change. APR 4.163. Rate subject to increase after consummation.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
The Metro Detroit Ford Dealers Monster Jam. Brought to you by series sponsors Advance Auto Parts and Ford Trucks. March 13th, the Silver Dome. With superstars Blue Thunder, Bounty Hunter, Scarlet Bandit, Monster Mud, Team Suzuki, Hot Wheels, Destroyer, Carl Malone's Power Forward, and for the first time ever, three world champions in one huge battle. Tom Mintz in Maximum Destruction, Dennis Anderson in Grave Digger, and Jim Kohler in Avenger. Get your tickets now at Ticketmaster, the Silverdome box office, or charge it 248-645-6666 or at Ticketmaster.com. Tickets subject to convenience and handling charges. All seats $2 more day of show. All seats reserved. See the trucks and meet the drivers. Grab your free Fit Pass for the Built Ford Tough Party in the Pits at your Metro Detroit Ford dealers. Fit Party Saturday, March 13th, 3 to 5 p.m. Valid with event ticket only. Monster Jam, March 13th, the Silver Dome, Post Hotel Holiday Inn Select.
Hello?
Hey, Bob, what are you doing, man?
No, I'm just leaving work. Why, what's up?
You should shoot across the border and meet me at Leopard's Lounge in Windsor. Dude, they have incredible girls from all over the world. And I'm telling you, these girls are hot.
Oh, man, I gotta go across the border. I don't know.
Come on, you big baby. It's just 5 minutes from the Bridger Tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. And get this. At Leopard's Lounge, you don't even have to pay a cover charge, ever. Plus, they even have free parking. You gotta meet me there. They have these two girls from Romania. Bro, I'm telling you, they're the friendliest girls I've ever met. Heck, all the girls at Leopard's Lounge are friendly.
Wait a minute. Did you say no cover, free parking, and women from all over the world?
Bro, that's what I've been telling you. So, are you going to meet me up at Leopard's Lounge or what?
Dude, I'm so there. I'll see you in about half an hour. And hey, if you get there before me, tell the girls I'm on my way.
You got it. I'll see you at Leopard's Lounge.
Leopard's Lounge in Broyle, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge in Broyle.
Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby, on 101 WRIF Detroit.
As attracted to the subject, most of you realize that I do mostly political issues, social questions, and what have you. But since I've always had trouble staying on subject and finishing things and what have you, I guess you'd kind of call it ADD today. That's what it's called. I saw books by Tom Hartman about that subject, and it wasn't suggesting that I take a lot of drugs or that kids do it. It a whole different refreshing approach, and I said, I got to get this guy on the air. I'm trying to think whether that was 6 or 7 years ago. Tom Hartman is back with me. Tom, do you remember how long ago it was we first talked?
Oh, it easily could have been 6 years, Peter.
Yes.
It's been a long time. I've been pleased and honored to know you all this time.
Well, thank you. And I was going to say, we ought to start a fan club for one another. I'd be pleased to be the president of yours, because besides writing books on this question that affects so many families and individuals, Tom Hartman is also an award-winning, best-selling author of over a dozen books, several that have come to prominence, Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception, and I'm sure we did. We interviewed you about this, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. Mm-hmm. It's going to appear in paper very soon, am I correct?
Yeah, actually, a new and improved edition is coming out from Random House in a couple of months, and Unequal Protection is the one that's going from hardcover to paperback this month or next month.
Great. Well, we interviewed you about both those, and we'll have to get you back on about that. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight caught the attention of Leonardo DiCaprio. And he even has made a little video about that. You can go to Tom's site, Tom Hartman. It's TomHartmann. But this brand new book from Inner Traditions International and Barron Company, let me see what's the, actually it's Park Street Press. It's that imprint of theirs. It's a new book. It's called The Edison Gene, like in Thomas Edison. The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child. And we could probably do the whole interview, Tom, just by you explaining the title and the subtitle.
Yeah.
Let's start off, though, with the basics, because I don't know. I mean, I always kid about it that I'm ADD. Is there a solid clinical definition of what ADD is and ADHD?
Well, it used to be a behavioral definition, and it was that people with ADD were distractible, impulsive, needed high levels of stimulation in their life. And if they couldn't sit still for a long time, they were also called ADHD or hyperactive.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 5 years or so, what they've discovered is that there's several genes that modulate a neurotransmitter chemical in the brain called dopamine that seem to be that are associated with this. So you've got a certain variation of these genes. You're like this. If you get a whole bunch of them, you're very much like this. You get a few of them, you're sort of like this. There is kind of a spectrum, but. And there's one gene in particular called the DRD4 gene that seems to be the biggie. And what I did with this book, which is really interesting, was I synthesized two things that happened. There's these two scientists working in two completely different areas of science who didn't know about each other, and I pulled this thing together, and it's a really interesting story. First of all, there was an article published in the Journal of the American Academy of Sciences, which is like the top science journal in the world, certainly in the United States, but one of the top in the world, by a guy named Robert Moises, who was with the Human Genome Project at Lawrence Livermore Laboratories, and then University of California, Irvine, hired him away, gave him his own lab and all sorts of things, and said, you can study anything you want if you'll bring your status and prestige to our university. And he said, well, I want to study ADHD, the genetics of it. And he said, okay, cool. So he did this study in conjunction with the Yale Medical School and Beijing University, where they took blood samples from 600 different groups of people who were racially pure. What I mean by that, not in the Hitlerian sense, but, you know, where they knew their ancestors back thousands of years. In other words, this is a group of people who crossed the Bering Straits, these Eskimos, you know, 22,000 years ago, and these people, you know, like that, from all around the world. And they looked at this particular gene, this DRD4 gene. And what they discovered was two things. One, that the gene emerged into the human gene. And by doing this, it's like looking back into a time machine. And what they discovered was that the gene emerged into the human genome, into the human race, about 40,000 years ago. Prior to that, it didn't exist. And that it's been doing something good, because it's been under all those 40,000 years what's called positive selection, which means it's been slowly increasing. And when genes do that, they do that because they're providing some benefit to the species. And so he wrote this article saying, number one, ADD is not a disease because the genetics indicate that this thing is doing something good. We don't know for sure what it is good that it's doing. And number two, it emerged 40,000 years ago, and he ends the article by saying, wouldn't it be fascinating to know what was happening in human history 40,000 years ago?
Sure.
Now, at the same time that I read that, I was reading, just totally by coincidence, a new book that had come out called The Dawn of Human History by Richard Klein. And he opens the book by talking about this guy named Stanley Ambrose, who's like the new Leakey family guy. You know, I mean, he's not the Leakey family, but, you know, they found Lucy and all this. He's the new hot paleoanthropologist. And he's in Africa, and he's discovered the oldest known human non-utilitarian, you know, not an axe or an arrowhead, but the oldest known, like, decorative stuff was in the 20,000 years old range, 26,000, 27,000, you know, the caves in France, the paintings and things.
Mm-hmm.
He found at a 40,000-year boundary layer in Tanzania, in the Rift Valley there, these ostrich shell beads that have been very carefully made into, like, something like wampum. And he also noticed that all of the tools, all the utilitarian tools that were more than 40,000 years old, were found in the same area where they were quarried. But those that were younger than 40,000 years old, some of them came from hundreds or thousands of miles away. And so he concluded, and with a fair amount of solid science, that something happened 40,000 years ago in Africa that caused people to start trading with each other, interacting with each other, and using a medium of exchange, which was these ostrich shell beads. And in fact, the oldest intact culture in Africa is called the San, the Bushmen, the Tukung people, you know?
Right.
And they are estimated to be 40,000 years old, their culture. And the only word in their language for ostrich shell bead is also the only word in their language for the kind of gift that you give to another tribe that causes them to incur a debt to you so that if times get bad, they have to allow you to hunt on their territory.
Hmm.
So he postulates in this book, Stanley Ambrose, he suggests that he has found proof, solid scientific proof, that the dawn of human civilization was 40,000 years ago and that it happened in this place in Africa. And he, in his book, says, I wonder what would have caused this to happen. So I call up Robert Moises, the geneticist.
Right.
And I said, you were wondering what happened 40,000 years ago. Let me tell you about Stanley Ambrose. 40,000 years ago, human civilization began. It was the dawn of what we call modern civilization. And, you know, and I told him, you know, the story that I just told you, and I said, do you think it could be the ADHD gene that caused that? And he said, it makes perfect sense to me. I'm paraphrasing now. His actual quotes are in the book. I interviewed him. It's in the book. He said, it makes perfect sense to me. He said, this is the gene for curiosity, after all. This is the gene for novelty seeking, for doing things that are out of the box, doing things out of the ordinary. So, of course, you know, if somebody's got this gene, they're going to try something like, hey, this tribe has always killed us when we went to visit them before. Why don't we try taking them a gift and see what happens?
Go ahead, sorry.
The premise of the book, I know I've been ranting here.
No, go ahead. I love to hear your rant.
The premise of the book, basically, is that ADHD, the gene for ADHD, is the gene that is responsible for civilization, that without ADD we wouldn't have civilization. We should be very grateful for these kids, and that Thomas Edison was like, you know, the poster boy for ADD, that we're facing terrible problems, environmental crises, political crises now, and that if you look at history, you find that in history it has always been, all the way back to 40,000 years ago, the guys, the men and women with ADD, who bailed us out, who made the discoveries, who made the inventions, who pushed the edges, who fixed things when they were broken. And we need to stop drugging these kids and start respecting them.
Tom Hartman is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. The new book by Tom is The Edison Gene, G-E-N-E, and the subtitle ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child. It's published by Park Street Books. And I was remiss in not reminding people that as well as all the books you've written, Tom is also the host of a daily phone-in talk show on the IE America Radio Network. And you can go to his site, TomHartman.com. Any way you spell it, it comes up, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
so
we got
right.
all four
right.
or five misspellings.
So you essentially say that that ADHD aren't signs of a disorder, but rather part of a highly adaptive and useful skill set. How did the ADDers of the world, like me, like you, how did we get the bad rap?
Well, the problem came along with agriculture and industry and schools. I mean, really, the schools is the bottom line problem. I mean, it's people like you and me who make the best inventors, the best astronauts, the best fighter pilots, the best detectives, the best entrepreneurs, the best investigative reporters. You know, we know how to multitask. We have insatiable curiosity. But the problem is that skill set, while it may be very useful in some occupations as adults, the best emergency room doctors, the best emergency medical technicians, the best race car drivers, best salespeople. In fact, I've never met a good salesman who wasn't ADD. While that may be useful in those adult professions, in that range of adult professions, our public schools simply have no use for those skills. And in fact, discourage and punish those skills. So what happens is that people like you and me go through public school and end up very often very badly wounded by the experience. There's a lot of walking wounded adults out there who have the potential to be very, very functional, but they're still carrying, just incredible pain from being told that they were stupid or they were bad or they were misfits or whatever, and they, little kids internalize these messages.
Well, now, when I've talked about this with listeners on phone-in talk shows, many people will call in with success stories of use of drugs like Ritalin that is often used to quote cure or to control, again in quotes, ADHD or ADD, and they'll say, "I was absolutely out of control. I had so many problems with my family if they're young or that they couldn't keep a job, and now I take this drug and I'm just fine."
The fact of the matter is, Peter, that if I had to make my living as a bookkeeper, I would probably take Ritalin.
Well,
I would have to.
I have
no choice.
Did you steal that line from me?
No.
I always say that. I always say, I mean, I would have gone out of my mind if I would have had to been like a bookkeeper. I probably couldn't have finished one column. I would have said, I got to get a drink of water.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And what's funny is my father made his living as a bookkeeper. He's a farmer, and my mother is the hunter. She's the one, who can, never keep things organized. And this is genetic. It travels in families. But and this is the terrible conundrum that we have. I mean, we were very fortunate. We have three kids, and all three of our kids have ADD. And our first one, we basically held her hand and pushed her and hassled her, but nurtured her through school, and she sort of survived the experience. Our second one, we were doing okay with a small business we owned at the time, and we were able to pull him out of public school and put him in a small private school in Atlanta, and that just saved his life academically. In fact, he just got accepted into the master's degree program at the University of Georgia.
Great.
And our third one, when she was 13, she said, "To hell with this, I'm tired." Pardon me. "To heck with this, I'm tired of public school." And she wanted us to homeschool her, and she found a place on the internet where she could homeschool, and she homeschooled and started college when she was 16 years old. So we figured out ways for our kids to survive, but the vast majority of parents don't have those kinds of options.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those parents whose children are stuck in a school where they have to behave as if they're bookkeepers, where they have to behave as if they're in a factory putting a screw in a bolt all day long, memorizing times tables and things, you have this terrible choice of, do you have your child be noble and drug-free and yet fail in school and be wounded by that failure, or do you have your child take a drug which may, we don't know the long-term consequences of, may have some long-term consequences frankly, I don't think that there are terrible consequences, but there's a lot of indicators that they're there. Do you have your child take this drug and succeed in school, but be on a drug?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a very difficult choice for parents to make, and I understand that, and I have a lot of empathy. And frankly, more often than not, I think if the drug works for kids, failing in school, I think, is a worse side effect than the side effects of the drug.
Well, in your book, The Edison Gene, you actually have some creative suggestions for schooling. But let's just, and I want to get to that. In fact, if I get too ADD, please remind me. I mean, I have to say that in school, I found school particularly, not college, but all the ones where you had to sit quietly without talking for long periods of time and had to raise your hand, I felt it was almost intolerable. And I used to get unsatisfactory remarks in self-control, and they would write little notes. Can't sit still. Yeah, so I got a job where I can either change the topic every few minutes or I can change the song that I'm playing on the air every few minutes. So that works.
The entertainment industry is full of us.
Now, you created the thesis of the hunter-farmer hypothesis, and that's your hypothesis about ADHD.
Yeah.
Now, and one thing we should make sure that people understand, you're not disparaging the farmer, that type.
Oh, no, we need our bookkeepers in society.
Yeah.
It's just that we've got to stop slapping down our hunters, our EMTs, and our entrepreneurs.
Okay, let me see, what there was, oh, man, right to the core, oh, yeah, I remember what I wanted to say. In terms of us as a nation, with the exception of refugees, slaves, and what have you, particularly those of us, and the majority of us that came from Europe, come from ancestors that decided that we're living in little towns in southern Italy, villages with thatched roofs in Russia, in Ireland, places like that. But the vast majority of people, no matter what they were suffering, starvation or war or the draft, and that drove so many people here to the United States, most people stayed there. Most people stayed, but there were some people that said, I'm going from this little town in Sicily to, United States. So, I mean, certainly that must have been the hunter.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the things that Moises found was that those nations that have high immigrant populations, or those areas, Hong Kong, for example, have higher incidence of ADHD. Hong Kong has more ADHD than the rest of China, genetically.
Okay.
Because and so does Taiwan, because that's where the misfits and malcontents went. same with the United States.
Well, there you go.
But it's only a small, it's not, like we're talking about 3% versus 2% kind of thing. It's not a huge difference, but it's a measurable difference.
You know, I'm wondering, I want to get into these strategies that you have for dealing with ADD kids in schools. But one of the things we, you just barely alluded to it, but there's a very, very end of the world prediction that not only comes from you and other people, but I just even saw a big article in Fortune magazine called Climate Collapse, the Pentagon's Weather Nightmare. And I was surprised to see that this also plays a role in your book, The Edison Gene.
Yeah, I open and close the book with it.
Can you, and this is kind of long, so maybe, I don't know if you've got kind of a headline version of this.
Yeah, I'll give you the 60-second
okay,
version.
Okay, good.
The 60-second version of it is that global warming is causing the ice on Greenland and in the Arctic to melt, and that's fresh water, that ice. That fresh water is diluting the salt water in the North Atlantic. The salt water in the North Atlantic, by becoming very salty, gets very heavy and drops down to the bottom of the Atlantic, which draws warm water from the Pacific up into the North Atlantic. We call that the Gulf Stream. And the heat from that Gulf Stream is what keeps Europe and the eastern part of North America from having the same climate as Alaska and Siberia, which are all at the same latitude. And if enough of that fresh water melts and dilutes that salt enough, it will stop sinking, and the Gulf Stream will shut down, and it'll throw Europe and parts of North America into an ice age. And it's happened before, and it looks like it's going to happen again. And it might happen in as little as a few decades. In fact, the Pentagon was predicting it could happen as early as 2020.
Now, I don't remember whether yours had dates in it. The Pentagon study said this had occurred before in human history, before the human intervention in terms of causing global warming. But from 1300 to 1850 was a period, a very, very cool period, where that shutdown of the Gulf Stream occurred then as well. But now, since we've been...
That wasn't a complete shutdown, though. That was just a minor variation, frankly.
You're talking about a complete shutdown.
Yeah, I'm talking about a complete shutdown. I'm talking about what happened. The last time this happened was 13,000 years ago.
Now, in what's called the Ice Age.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, folks, if it has occurred to anybody, wait a minute. Now, this is you, Peter. You have brought Chicken Little on to your program. I don't know if this makes you feel more comfortable or not, but this is the basis of a Pentagon study with a dramatic concern about this. You can have these right-wing talk show hosts say that global warming is something that liberals made up to take away people's SUVs, but it's of dramatic concern to the government. Now, how does this all tie in? The name of your book, Tom Hartman, is The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child. How do you tie these streams in together?
Well, I start out the book by explaining about what it's called the Great Conveyor Belt, what we just described, the possibility that an ice age is coming and that we've created it. It's coming, you know, 20,000 years earlier than it should because of global warming. And then I go through the whole thing about, you know, human history and how this gene created civilization and how the Edisons among us have pulled the fat out of the fire. They've saved us so many times in the past or improved our lives. And I wrap up the book by saying, you know, we are facing problems of biblical proportions, you know, this ice age being one of many. And it's going to take brilliant, creative, innovative, out-of-the-box thinking if we're going to survive. And we now, more than ever before, we need our Edison gene children.
Hmm. Now, maybe adults. Maybe we can finish somewhat, because I'm sure that there are people that have been diagnosed as ADD or parents of children with ADD and ADHD that are listening, and you have several chapters that have to do with that, providing discipline and structure for the Edison gene child. Alfred,
child-rearing stuff.
Yeah, okay, that's a good way to sum it.
And there's a lot of stuff about diet and nutrients and things that people can use as alternatives to medication. There's some really fascinating studies about nutritional deficiencies, and particularly fatty acid deficiencies. They give kids fish oil, and their hyperactivity goes away.
Really?
Like some more than half the time.
Better than Pop-Tarts?
There you go.
I mean, do you buy that? That sometimes, you know, people say that the sugar and refined carbohydrates produces absolutely bad results in ADD kids.
And it does.
It does.
Particularly over the long term, because it strips out these fatty acids. The brain is about 85% fat. And it's a very particular type of fat, and it's a type of fat that is not in our diet now, that was in our diet when we ate raw meat and unrefined vegetables.
Now, this, you know, I have the greatest respect for you and your ideas. You've been a psychotherapist, among a lot of other interesting jobs. I mean, here's proof you're ADD, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Usually bored.
Yes, and these ideas in here seem very solid, but we're talking about reforming an institution. And institutions often have to almost be driven to the point of revolution before there's actually any change. So, I mean, I almost get the feeling you could show this to most educators, and they'd go, yeah, and then go back to doing exactly what they've been doing. So, I mean, how do we make an impact on the educational institution?
Well, I think our schools are just terribly, terribly broken, and this administration with their leave no child behind nonsense and all these other things are driving it right to the edge. And that may ultimately be a good thing. I suggest in the book we need to basically tear it down and start over from scratch with a different philosophy. We have an educational system that was designed in the 18th and 19th century to provide good workers for the mills and the factories. We don't need good mills and factory workers anymore. I mean, we still do some, but the world has moved on. It's time for us to reform our educational system.
Well,
I talk about how to do it in the book.
I guess, yeah. I mean, usually what I ask people, is the political will out there? I mean, a few seers.
I hear from parents all the time. You know, actually, I hear from a lot of teachers who are saying, yes, I'd like to do this too. You know, it's a, I'm getting a lot of feedback from parents who are going, tell me what to do. And my answer, my standard answer is join the PTA, run for the school board, get active.
Hmm. Well, Tom Hartman, thank you so much for joining us. The book is The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child. You can see this and a lot about Tom's other books at tomhartman.com. It's T-H-O-M-H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N, but any variation of Tom Hartman will get you there. It's published by Park Street Press. John A. Rately, M.D., author of A User's Guide to the Brain, says, once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps us helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world. Tom Hartman, thanks for being on the Peter Werby Show.
Oh, Peter, thanks so much for having me on here. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Rip Ross in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We tried calling this guy, got this woman, and she made the mistake of hanging up on us.
Why'd you hang up?
I have company and I am busy.
Oh, well, you say usually when people hang up, I don't know if you're new, if you just got citizenship, usually people say goodbye before they hang up the telephone.
I told you I had to go.
I remember you were laughing about the erection, but...
No, I said I had to go, no, and I'm hanging up. Goodbye.
People, do you usually, say goodbye.
Wait,
that's good. You learn.
Yeah, okay.
She didn't have any company. What is she talking about?
Company.
Liar.
Yeah, I know. People lie in a...
Let's call back and say we're a caterer. And there's nobody over here, they'll say, liar!
Let me tell you what's really going to happen. You're going to call up as a so-called caterer, and she's going to be, I just talked to you. I said goodbye.
You never know.
If it's in Vegas as a bet, I'm not so sure I'm going to put any money on this.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm looking for you, dear. So this is a caterer. You having a party over there?
Not today.
By God.
You lied. You said you had company, lady.
I have company, but I don't have a party going on.
That's hilarious.
You
lied.
You lied.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Rift.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor in Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
We'll get back to more Rip Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
Twice
is nice. Tuesday on the Rip.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF, the home of rock and roll, brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Rip all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Rip Rock bands. Plus, the Rip gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Who's your boy?
Tuber Tuesday. Double the Rip Rock.
Double the Rip Prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Super Tuesday on the Rip. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Well, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's on the Rip.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Pelosino's Pizza and Grinders with 18 locations, one near you. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Rip.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and
issues in the United States that you think have been put to bed so long ago, or that at least given the commitment of this country to equal rights to everybody, that things like gay marriage and related stuff like that would... Everybody would just kind of think, well, there's certain things in this society that I don't agree with that other people do, but it's sort of the live and let live, a strategy of tolerance. Yet one of the issues that has not gone away and continues to haunt us and continues to be debate is that of abortion. And a very interesting book came my way. It's called Beyond Choice, Reproductive Freedom in the 21st Century. And the author is Alexander Sanger. And Alexander Sanger is currently chair of the International Planned Parenthood Council and serves as a goodwill ambassador for the United Nations Population Fund. He has served as president of Planned Parenthood of New York City and its international arm, the Margaret Sanger Center International Center. And let me say that right. The Margaret Sanger Center International. And we're talking with him in New York. Alexander Sanger, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you.
All right, you have a very famous name, and also you you headed the Margaret Sanger Center International. It's your grandmother, Margaret Sanger, a very, very interesting and important woman in American history. I wonder if you could just give us a little, and whole books have been written about her, but maybe just a shorthand to remind some of us that may not place her exactly.
Yes, well, my grandmother was born at the end of the 19th century, and her mother was an Irish Catholic immigrant who was pregnant 18 times and had 11 children and 7 miscarriages and was dead at age 49. And my grandmother had to drop out of school, help bring up her younger brothers and sisters, and she never forgot the death of her mother because of uncontrolled, involuntary childbearing. My grandmother became a nurse, and nursing on the Lower East Side of New York. She was taking care of women who were giving themselves abortions or going to the back alleys and getting an illegal, dangerous abortion and were dying as a result. And one too many of these women died in my grandmother's arms, and she said enough. And she devoted the rest of her life to legalizing birth control and making it available to women, especially poor women, who needed it. It was a 50-year crusade, and she eventually prevailed when the Supreme Court in 1965 overturned the Connecticut birth control law in the Griswold case.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother died the next year at age 87.
And I would hardly advise people, if they wanted a biography of an extraordinary woman, to just look up Margaret Sanger, S-A-N-G-E-R. Margaret Sanger's grandson, Alexander Sanger, is with us. And Beyond Choice, Reproductive Freedom in the 21st Century. Well, we've had supposedly reproductive freedom for the last 30 years or so, although those forces that are anti-choice are still with us. Why does the debate continue?
Well, I think it relates to the fact that reproductive freedom involves giving women control over childbearing, childbearing of a nation, childbearing of the family. The future of the human race is really in women's hands, and that is profoundly threatening to a lot of people. Interestingly, both men and women in equal percentages support reproductive freedom to the extent that they do. There's not really a male-female divide on it. But it's more of a worldview where giving women control and allowing women to express their sexuality is profoundly threatening. I think the problem has been with us on the pro-choice side. I don't think we've been terribly convincing in our arguments for why we believe there ought to be reproductive freedom. And I ask in the question in my book, why do we have reproductive freedom? Should we have it? What good does it do? And I'm trying to develop some new arguments other than the ones that probably your listeners have heard and are tired of about, you know, a woman's right to choose, mm-hmm. or feminist arguments, or it's a woman's body, and all the arguments that I have made and that I happen to believe in. But they haven't really reached the huge 60% or so of the American public that is conflicted about abortion.
Well, it's the what I call actually the anti-choice side or the compulsory pregnancy side that I often call it. They in many ways have the moral high ground, don't they?
They've been very good at expressing the moral high ground, saying that the life should be protected at all stages and both when it's created and until its natural demise. They've been very very good at expressing that over and over again. And the whole point of my book is to say that the pro-choice side has the moral high ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I make the argument that reproductive freedom, which includes abortion, helps humanity have children that are in fact going to survive and in turn have more children. It's a way of women especially, but also men, ensuring the survival of their families, giving their children the best start in life. When you say that abortion should not exist or you criminalize it, what you're saying is that every pregnancy should result in childbirth. Well, that's not good from an evolutionary point of view, a biological point of view. Probably as every woman who's given birth knows, being pregnant and giving birth are have an immense impact on a woman's body, on her other children, on her family, and women. We've evolved. Women especially have evolved to time, space, plan their childbearing to give the best chance of their children surviving. And this is the argument I make at length in my book. I believe that life should be the ultimate, the supreme value. I agree with the pro-life side in that, but I define life to include its propagation, its creation, as its nurturing. And when you look at life from that point of view, women do need reproductive freedom in order to create life that has the best chance of surviving.
What do you think, Alexander Sanger, about the fact that in many ways, it just occurred to me that to some extent you're an anomaly, you're a man speaking out for women's reproductive rights, where it appears, at least publicly, that most of the effective spokespeople are for reproductive freedom are women. Yet on the other side, the most militant anti-abortion, anti-choice people are men. I mean, they're men that want to make laws and actually physically stop women from entering women's health centers, or will be involved in assassinations of abortion providers. I don't know if that question was entirely clear. What I was saying, essentially, you have men as being the leadership of the anti-choice movement, and generally women who are the pro-choice.
Yeah, certainly on the pro-choice side, it is mostly women. From a biological point of view, controlling pregnancy and childbirth is an acutely a female issue, because they're the ones whose body and lives are directly affected. There are women who are leaders in the pro-life side. However, there's certainly the men that you've mentioned are prominent. Actually, as I said earlier, when you look at the polls, men and women really don't diverge by more than a percentage point or two in their opinions about the issue. But a lot of men find women's reproductive freedom threatening and women's sexuality threatening, and that comes from a biological anomaly that men never know who their children are.
Mm-hmm.
Until the creation of DNA about 10 to 15 years ago.
Well, we used to say mama baby, papa maybe.
Yep. And yeah. actually Aristotle in 350 BC was the first person I found to write about the topic. Men can only rely on the resemblance test. Everyone going into a nursery would say, oh, it looks just like the father.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever bothers to say it looks just like the mother because they know it's the mother's child. And this is the problem of what is called paternity uncertainty. And so men have tried to restrict women's sexuality, sexual freedom. They've banned birth control and abortion to try to make it less likely that women will have affairs outside of marriage. I think the way to deal with the issue of paternity uncertainty is for people to make use of DNA testing. I mean, why not know who your children are? I think that's good for men, it's good for women and families, good for children. And I think it'll take away a lot of the threat that men feel that they might be raising someone else's child.
Well, that's certainly the psychological and social aspects of it, but there's also a theological aspect to it that I don't think there's any way to get around. I mean, if you think that life begins with conception, and to interfere with that at all is murder, well, sort of end of argument. I don't even try to talk people out of that. It's their theological view. I just don't want them to take their view of theology and biology and transform it into a law that affects women that don't agree with that.
Yes, I do have a few responses, and I do respect faith, and I talk about it at some length in my book. One of the real anomalies of our reproductive system is that 75%, that's three-quarters, of fertilized eggs don't survive until birth. That's an astonishing
mm-hmm.
wastage, if you will, of human life, if you believe that life, a human being, is created at conception. I believe that life is created at conception, at fertilization. I don't believe it's a human being yet. I believe it grows into being a human being. But if you do believe it is a human being and should be endowed with all the rights that those of us who are born have, it's tough to explain how a system like that has been created or evolved. And I've read the Bible. There's nothing specific about either birth control or abortion or when life is created or when the soul enters the body. There's been lots of debates in the Christian church over the centuries about when the soul does enter the body. And actually, originally, the theologians of the early Catholic Church thought that if it was a male embryo, the soul entered at the 40th day, and if it was a female embryo, it entered at the 80th day. And I'll let you speculate on what the reason for that might be.
Right.
It's beyond me, but that theory didn't die out for a long time. And then there were theories about, when the fetus first starts moving in about the fourth or fifth month, that's when life is really created. So there have been a lot of opinions over the years about when life begins. And, it is a matter of faith. We're never going to prove when a soul enters the body. I know plenty of adults who I don't think have a soul. So, I'm not belittling faith. I'm just saying that there are areas for people to question and come up with their own decisions.
Alexander Sanger is my guest. He's the author of the just published Beyond Choice, Reproductive Freedom in the 21st Century. And it is a public affairs book. Is that the publisher's name, Public Affairs Book?
Public Affairs is the name of the publisher.
Okay, because it says...
Right. They're a wonderful publisher. The other books on their winter list, Wesley Clark's biography is on there.
Well, you're in wonderful company.
Yeah.
Publicaffairsbooks.com is where you can go. You're listening to the Peter Werby Show, and we're talking about the aspects of abortion that still rile this country and the population. I thought one thing that was interesting in your book was that the majority of people think that, I don't want to misquote it, but think that it's immoral, yet support it.
Yes, there's amazing what is called moral confusion. Those aren't my words, but that's one reporter called it in the American public, the majority think that abortion is immoral, and a majority think it ought to remain legal, at least in part. And it's a matter of, again, of personal choice. I think that a lot of people wonder, well, might I ever need an abortion? Or might my daughter ever need one? And they're saying, well, myself, I would never do it, but maybe I will. And so people understand that the realities of reproduction are fraught with danger, and maybe it's not always wise to give birth every time you are pregnant. I opened the book with a story about my wife, who graciously let me tell the story. We went for prenatal care for our first son, who was then 4 months of gestation. And my wife has a congenital condition, and the doctor was, examining, and wondering if the baby might have this condition. And he said, well, someday we're going to have a prenatal genetic test to see if the embryo or the fetus has that condition. And my wife said, I would never kill my baby because he had this particular condition. And that's a sentiment with which I agreed and do agree. But there maybe other times, and my wife also thinks there are other times where she might need to have an abortion and would think it would be a moral choice. But in that case, she thought it would be an immoral choice.
Well, let's get back to the little thing about, not little. To me, it's a whopping contradiction. When you talk about, pardon me, this idea of abortion being immoral, I mean, on the phone-in talk shows that I've done, I've often had people frame the procedure in terms of calling it murder. So a woman will call up and say, or a man, and say, I think abortion is murder. And I respond by, and this is not true, I said, my wife has had an abortion, which she hasn't, but I say that. I said, my wife, I shouldn't give this away, but my wife has had an abortion. Do you think she's a murderer? And they go, huh? And I said, well, you just said abortion was murder. There's sort of a missing referent here. Is my wife a murderer? And they say, well, I think people, I don't agree with it, but then they get back to that. But I think, I think it's murder. So it is a curious kind of minefield of moral ambiguity.
Well, yes, and, there are 45 million abortions. 25 million women are immoral, psychotic, depraved murderers, which is what our patients are often called when they try to come to a Planned Parenthood clinic. When you particularize it and you actually think about an individual woman and look at what her circumstances are, I think a little bit of understanding of the human condition is called for. And understanding that your moral decisions that you may make may not apply to other people.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say 45. Actually, I've never heard that figure. That's
it's a huge figure.
Yeah, it is. But
it's about 20% of pregnancies worldwide end in abortion.
How many of those occur in societies where abortion is illegal? Like the only places in the whole Western Hemisphere where abortion is legal, if I'm correct, is United States, Canada, and Cuba.
That is more or less correct. There are certain, in Latin America, it's mostly illegal, but a couple of states in Mexico have fairly permissible abortion laws. But abortion is legal in India. It's legal in China, legal in the former Soviet Union. It's legal in South Africa. So the abortions around the world take place roughly half in legal countries, half in countries where it's illegal.
Hmm.
And the tragedy is just because it's legal doesn't mean it's safe. It ought to be, but it's not. And in India, for instance, there's terrible mortality of women from a legal abortion.
Now, why does the pro-choice movement, the people that support a woman's right to reproductive freedom, why does it have seemingly so little clout compared to the compulsory pregnancy people? I mean, it seems like even the most liberal legislators will make some say, well, I don't agree with abortion, however. You know what I mean? I mean, and part of it is that phrase, pro-life. I mean, they that's what I meant earlier about saying that they've stolen the high ground simply by appropriating that phrase.
Yes. And I think, I used to think that it was because those who were pro-life were single-minded about the issue and it was the only issue they cared about. And they raised a lot of money, and by their determination, they were focused, and the legislators would respect that and fear it. And I used to think the pro-choice people were, we vote on other issues as well as choice. We think about the environment or the healthcare system or whatever. But I've come to the conclusion that I think it's really a battle of ideas, that we've lost a battle of values. Which is why I wrote the book. I'm trying to bring values and define a morality where reproductive freedom is a part of it and is defined to be a good and positive thing for society. I think when that happens and we reach that huge 60% in the middle that are conflicted about the issue, maybe we can change the politics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the politics follow the ideas.
Well, let's go back a little to the morality of it all, and in a sense, your book, Beyond Choice, Reproductive Freedom in the 21st Century, is trying to position abortion, which, as I say, I think in many ways the anti-abortion people have at least the high ground in the public relations area, that that center it, if you would, in terms of its importance. I mean, you did a little at the beginning, but how do we invest abortion, something that that at best is an uncomfortable procedure and is always a sad occasion, or generally is, with something positive?
Well, we have to look at put it in the context of reproduction. Reproduction is a dangerous occupation. The most dangerous position to be in the world is to be a pregnant woman. 500,000 women die every year around the world from pregnancy or childbirth. Those can be avoided, and women have evolved to avoid dying in childbirth by timing and spacing and limiting the number of children they have. When you have children too close together, when you have too many children, the odds vastly increase that you're not going to survive childbirth. The second most dangerous profession, if you will, in the world to be, or even more dangerous than being a pregnant woman, is being a newborn. 4 million newborns die every year before they're 30 days old. 11 million children die before their fifth birthday. Survival is not guaranteed just because you're born. And when children and infants are dying, this is a human and biological tragedy. And the purpose of us being on this planet, our biological purpose, as being a species that we are, is to survive and propagate ourselves. And that's the context in which I'm putting abortion. It's in my moral universe, it is the same as birth control in its purpose, which is to limit and space and time children so that they have the best chance for survival and so that the woman survives. To do this, men and women plan and strategize to have what I call reproductive success. Reproduction is not random. It's not done by chance. You spend a lot of time courting and mating and trying to get pregnant and then raising children for 21 or 30 years. All this is not done automatically. It is dangerous. There are trade-offs all the way through it. And that's the context in which I put abortion. It's, mm-hmm. it's part of the ideas of our civilization that enable us to survive. If we don't survive and reproduce, then nothing else we do is going to happen.
Should remind people that on April 25th, Sunday, April 25th, coming up, that there's going to be a large reproductive rights march in Washington, D.C. You can go to my website, peterwerby.com, and get the information on that. I actually don't have the direct site for it right at my fingertips. But there is a great fear on the part of the reproductive rights movement and women who support a women's right to choose that the current administration is in thrall to the anti-choice, anti-abortion forces. Is there a danger that women could lose their reproductive rights, that like Roe v. Wade could be rolled back?
Well, the Roe v. Wade hangs by one or maybe two votes on the U.S. Supreme Court. The last case that talked about Roe went to the court in the year 2000. It was on what they call the partial birth abortion law that Congress passed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was overturned. It was declared unconstitutional by a 5-4 vote. So a one-vote swing would eliminate much of what Roe stands for. What Roe stands for is women being able to make these decisions with the advice of a physician, and that the woman's health is the paramount consideration, and that we let doctors practice medicine without unnecessary interference. All these are under attack, and these the so-called partial birth law, which will go back up to the Supreme Court again probably in a year or two. We did not have a retirement from the Supreme Court, despite all the rumors that one of the justices might retire, and I think... I suspect President Bush let it be known he didn't want to have to appoint a justice in an election year.
Mm-hmm.
He would have to show his hand. And I worry if one of the justices who supports Roe retires, that the president will appoint someone who opposes Roe. And as we saw with Judge Pickering last month, even if the Senate refuses to confirm, the president can make a recess appointment and make an appointment to the Supreme Court that will last for the term of the Congress.
I know that the court is supposed to be above politics, but abolishing Roe v. Wade and allowing abortion to be made illegal again would create the context for social chaos and civil disobedience on a grand scale. I wonder if even conservative justices, if they saw that was the result of their vote, would agree to do that.
Well, that would certainly be the result. I mean, there would be massive disobedience. I think there would be incredible... political backlash. Republicans that I talk to, who are level-headed about the issue, say that it would be terrible for the Republican Party to be seen as the ones promoting this. And there are plenty of Republicans who are pro-choice, and there are Democrats who are pro-life. So it's not totally a party thing.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the president and the majority of the party in Congress indicate that they want to overturn Roe.
Well, we're out of time, unfortunately. And speaking of Republicans, there's a nice endorsement for your book from former Governor Christine Todd Whitman. In the tradition of his grandmother, Margaret Sanger, Alex Sanger is challenging us to look in a new way at a woman's reproductive freedom. The book is Beyond Choice, Reproductive Freedom in the 21st Century. It's available from Public Affairs Publishers. Alexander Sanger, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you so much.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. you are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like La Bisteca, located in Plymouth, proudly featuring certified Piedmontese beef. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roach, put your best face and body forward with help from Dr. Roach.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Now it's The Riff's Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock.
1 solid hour of your Riff rock and roll request.
All the excitement and fun you can bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on The Riff.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Riff rock and roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown@wrif.com. The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock
with Meltdown.
What a run. 101 WRIF.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like La Scala, located in the heart of Windsor's famous Little Italy district, you can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Got some great celebrity phone numbers. We had to try them. First, we called the 49ers' Terrell Owens, and then Brian Urlacher's girlfriend, Paris Hilton.
You have reached the Sprint voice mailbox of
81.
To leave a voice message, press 1.
Terrell, this is Jeff Garcia. I just want to say I'm not supposed to have a little cry with you the other day. It was really nice seeing you cried, too, because I knew you cared. I love you. Bye, Tio. Giving him rides
hey, it's
before.
Paris. My screen is broken on my phone, so therefore I cannot read any of the numbers on it. So make sure to leave a number with the message, and I will get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Paris. It's 54 here. Big Brian. Just thinking about putting it in your butt. Boom. What do you say, PH? How about a big 5-4? Up the old Yeah, I was thinking to run a post pattern right up the middle. When I see a hole, you know me, I got to plug it up. Didn't mean to total a damn thing.
Good thing you love it.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
That is.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101. 101.